It's showtime.
Conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, day two, with the new broadcast rig in place. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. I'm told that the audio is much nicer with the new rig. I've had multiple communications to that effect. Yes, indeed. And gratifying it is. And things are going to get even better going down the road. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the 14th day of August, 2019. It's a Wednesday. You know what that means. And we will get to that in fairly short order. But of course, every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, because this program does not stay on the air without the determination of the community keeping it on the air. And so thanks go out to Ralphs and to Matt in San Francisco. Ralphs in Milwaukee and Matt in San Francisco. Thank you very kindly. I guess officially the 14th day of the month is now the loneliest day of the month, since we've got three subscribers on the 13th. So thank you to Ralphs and thank you to Matt. And thanks also over in the past 24 hours to a kind person who wishes to remain anonymous and has made sure that the challenge was met from last night, and have a show on me. So that puts us in a position to just be exactly where we were, or where we're supposed to be, for this evening. Thank you very kindly. So that means the fundraising goal is $200. And the deacons do not get the night off. No, they don't. They don't get the night off at all. Because, brethren and sistren, it is, in fact, prayer meeting Wednesday on The Horn. Yes, there's breaking news of more gun madness in the United States. Details are sketchy, but we will get to them in short order. But, brethren and sistren, I tell you what, it was a lovely, kind of cloudy-ish day, but it got nicer as the day went on. It's a toasty 82 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios, attached to the Cathedral of Common Sense. And brethren and sistren, I tell you what, you know, you can't, one shows off new stuff to the little old blue-haired ladies in the Fellowship Hall kitchen at one's peril. So, having seen that I had become proficient with the propane griddle, kindly provided by another sweet and kind member of the community. Well, the little old blue-haired ladies looked at me and said, "We ain't heard nothing but about how them Philly good them Philly cheesesteaks was. So, you just take a cathedral check and go on over to the Kroger and see what you can do, because we's having Philly cheesesteaks off the griddle this evening for Fellowship Hall supper." So away I went to the Kroger. We try to shop at Kroger because, well, it's a union shop, and we try. And even though you pay a little bit higher price, it's worth it to know that you're supporting people making a living wage. And so there at the Kroger, I found something I would not have found at the Walmart. I found paper-thin sliced ribeye manager special steak, steak sandwich, Philly cheesesteak beef. And me and the little old blue-haired men, being how I'm one of the not-so-little blue-haired men, we went out to the Cathedral Griddle and went to work. Little old blue-haired ladies were busy preparing the salad and the French fries, and along the way they found time for some lemon icebox pie as well. So they had the desserts and the sides and everything covered. Found some got some good bread from the Country Club Bakery up in Fairmont. Oh, that's good cheesesteak bread. And well, everybody had cheesesteaks. I got the good yellow, melty, nice Amish American cheese from up at the Wiggling Pig, and the onions and the green peppers and the mushrooms. Oh, it worked and did the beef up and melted the cheese on top. No cheese whiz, come on, yeah. And let the bread steam over top of the. And I got to tell you, I think everybody was happy. Now, your average deacon here at the cathedral can knock down a 12-inch Philly cheesesteak in less time than it takes you to say cheese whiz. But I think they actually managed to have them in their mouth long enough to actually appreciate the flavor. They seemed like a happy bunch of deacons, having eaten their salad and their fries, and had a little blue cheese for the fries and the salad, and went through those lemon icebox pies like nobody's business, brethren and sistren. And then, being the deacons and doing what the deacons do, they trundled their massive bulk up the couple of flights of stairs to where they could walk out in the remaining late afternoon sunshine and commenced to chain-smoking with the sinners and bragging and boasting to them about the cheesesteaks that they didn't get because they were sinners. And then occasionally bumming the occasional cigarette because they, well, you know, they run short. A little bit later, Sister Carol showed up at the vestibule door with the Horn solar-powered cattle prod crackling in the humid late summer afternoon. And they weren't nearly as insouciant as they'd been of late. And the deacons put wings to heel and got moving and trundled through the door of the vestibule, casting hateful glances at the cattle prod, down past that desiccating bowl of buttermints and on down in front. And they're waiting here. They got the heavy brass-bound plates with the PayPal button attached to the cathedral Wi-Fi in the bottom. Yeah. So we'll call the minister of music up, brethren and sistren. We'll call the minister of music up, and we will ask the minister of music to lead us in the offertory prayer. With every head bowed and every eye closed, glory, hallelujah, amen. Just keep that one eye scrunched open so you don't get cronked in the head with the collection plate. It hurts. They're heavy, and they carry a certain amount of inertial force as they move from hand to hand. Brother Minister of Music, if you would, please.
And he said, it's time for you to leave behind the things of this world. The fine houses, the fancy cars, the flashy clothes, because we are all naked in the eyes of the Lord.
Stop! Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. It's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made latest millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches, thanks to all you stupid bitches. Said religion should be free.
Oh, Hut Sut Ralston on the Rilla Raw with a brawl of suet. I love you. Welcome, brethren and sister, to prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn. Oh, glory. I'm calling on you now. I want you to come on up off of your seats, amen, and onto your feet, glory, and scrunch and screech and wiggle and waggle and waddle out from betwixt the pews and walk without rhythm, ho, so you won't attract the worms, amen. And come on down that blood-red aisle and fall upon your knees at the altar. Laying your hands upon the subwoofer. It's a big subwoofer, brethren and sister, and there's room for all the hands. And feel the healing rays of common sense flowing through you from the server on high. I am Archpope, Uber, Rabbi, Ultimate Imam, Animated Animist, Antagonized, Agnostic, Maximum Metropolitan, Vicarious Vicar, Munificent Mullah, Ginormous Guru, Bob Kincaid. And this here is Prayer Meeting Wednesday from the Cathedral of Common Sense. Amen, glory. Ain't God good? Hallelujah. Yes. Brethren and sisters, I want to tell you there are great challenges to faith moving through our country today. Yes, there are. Why, not too long ago, a right famous feller from Australia, name of Matty Sampson, well, he writ and co-writ a whole bunch of songs for Christian music groups and made money off of it. And then t'other day, he went to the Instagram, brethren and sistren, and announced that the devil had done got holt of him. He said, and I quote, "Time for some real talk. I'm genuinely losing my faith, and it doesn't bother me. Like, what bothers me now is nothing. I'm so happy now, so at peace with the world. It's crazy. This is a soapbox moment, so here I go. How many preachers fall? Many. No one talks about it. How many miracles happen? Not many. No one talks about it. Why is the Bible full of contradictions? No one talks about it. How can God be love, yet send 4 billion people to a place all because they don't believe? No one talks about it. Christians can be the most judgmental people on the planet. They can also be some of the most beautiful and loving people. But it's not for me. I'm not in anymore. I want genuine truth, not just the I believe it kind of truth. Science keeps piercing the truth of every religion. Lots of things help people change their lives, not just one version of God. Got so much more to say, but for me, I'm keeping it real. Unfollow if you want. I've never been about living my life for others. All I know is what's true to me right now. Christianity just seems to me like another religion at this point. I could go on, but I won't. Love and forgive, absolutely. Be kind, absolutely. Be generous and do good to others, absolutely. Some things are good no matter what you believe. Let the rain fall, the sun will come up tomorrow and probably melt the roads here in Australia because of climate change. No, brethren and sister, and I added that last part. But then Marty Sampson went and deleted all the other smarmy bullshit Christian posts from his Instagram account. So it's pretty obvious that the devil has done got a hold of him. Well, he can just go and join those other 4 billion people that God loved so much, he decided to barbecue them for all eternity. They've fallen by the wayside because devils. And I guess the devil's gotten hold of another evil jealous. A woman by the name of Beth Moore, of course, she don't know what it says in there in the Bible about the women's not being preachers because, you know, sin of Eve and all of that. She runs some tax-free Dodge called Proof of Life Ministries. But she's a little bit different as evangelicals go because she's kind of anti-Trumpish. And she's talked about sexism in the evangelical community. Well, apparently the shooting in El Paso got under her skin. Oh, let's check in with, this is interesting. We've been getting more and more dickhead mail lately. Some dickhead named Ed said, "This is really how you do your show every day. You have nothing positive to say at all. Your show is a nonstop bitch fest. Democrats are not going to win in 2020 with negativity." Oh, you silly fuckwit. Go and listen to it. Why don't you go listen to some right-wing program? Bitch fest? Really? Go listen to them braying about QAnon. Or listen to them lie to themselves about how awesome Trump is. Because the whole thing here, this story, and by the way, fuck off. That's okay. Ed. Yeah, Ed's real cool. Ed's so cool he spells Ed with a hyphen. E hyphen D. Or I don't know, maybe it means erectile dysfunction. But anyway... go fuck yourself with a white, and I do mean white, hot poker, Ed. Because, of course, we complain. Because this country's in the toilet. Because there are children in cages, you fuckwit. Kidnapped. There are Nazis in the streets. Klansmen. White supremacists. What do you want us to do? Throw a party over that? Fucking Ed. You numbnuts. Yeah. But anyway, Beth Moore said, "Any Christ that can be invoked in support of white nationalism is a false Christ of the highest, most hellish order. An antichrist. A wholly opposite Christ. No such Christ as the Christ Jesus of Scripture. Who taught his followers a love that sacrifices life and limb for others." And the good, God-fearing, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual Christians went hog-ass wild. Because she went on and said, "Let it be known, let it be declared by genuine followers of Jesus that the man who opened fire in El Paso may invoke a Christ of some kind, but it is not our Christ. His Christ would be unrecognizable to us. Unrecognizable in Scripture, we claim no Christ of white nationalism." How about, Beth, you just say, and this is just a suggestion. How about you just say that he ain't a Christian? That he's going to go barbecue when he dies? That he doesn't participate or partake of the saving grace of Christ Jesus? Because she's still giving him a little wiggle room there that he might be a Christian. And then she said, Christian leaders lead. Do not shrink back in cowardice. Be bold. Be clear. Do not assume people know where you stand. History will prove this to be a most critical hour, and our silence to have been our shameful complicity. Well, that's the whole problem now, isn't it? The entire evangelical community is engaged, not in silent complicity, but in active, noisy, vocal complicity. Kidnap more kids, God Emperor Trump! Put them in more cages, that'll put the Jesus in them! Woo! And the little maggot Christians didn't like it at all.
Yet we've heard zero from Beth on the issue, even when New York passed abortion up to birth. Crickets.
Yeah, I just love my new cricket sound effect. That's going to get a lot of work. Get a lot of use. But, maybe she got it like 1/10 right. But it doesn't really matter. They're just, well, Yeshua, brethren and sistren, this being prayer meeting Wednesday, called people like the evangelicals in America whited sepulchers. Beautiful to behold, but full of death and corruption on the inside. Speaking of death and corruption, the National Ruble Association's roulette wheel of death stopped on the Nicetown neighborhood of Philadelphia today, within the last couple of hours. At least 5 police officers have been shot. One of them was shot either in the head or the chest. Children were playing in a playground nearby. One witness said it was like a war, like the scenes you'd see in a war, the guns, the fire, the noise. It was like bombs. It looked like bombs going off simultaneously at a time when people are having dinner. One shooter is said to be in custody. We know very little beyond that. We know the police responded in force. And we don't know what kind of weapon was involved, so everything else is pure speculation. The only thing that's not speculative is that it'll happen again. And after it happens again, it'll happen again. It'll happen again. And it's going to keep on happening again because there is, while there's about a 90% consensus in this country that we would like to put our children and our families ahead of fucking guns, well, that's not the position of the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual Republican Party. And the maggots who form its core and its base. Yeah. I didn't mention it, but the story came out, yesterday-ish. Precious Ivanka has been making phone calls to Joe Manchin and Pat Toomey. And even Chris Murphy in Connecticut.
asking if we can get consensus on the background checks. Well, Toomey and Manchin were the ones who put forward the background check bill the last time, and it died a sad, ignominious death in the Senate because Mitch McConnell loves National Ruble Association sweet, 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 sweet dollars more than he cares about America's children. But what's kind of interesting is that while the Toomey Manchin bill, such as it was, would have closed the background check loopholes, one of the underreported aspects of that bill was it would have made getting handguns easier. See, what the one hand taketh away, the other hand giveth. Because compromise. Right. Jesus. But precious Ivanka wants to, she wants him to think that she can get Dadums. Well, she can, you know, sort of get up on Dadums' lap and squirm and wiggle a little bit. And get Dadums to agree to do something meaningless. When in fact this is going to take, if we really want to stop these slaughters in the United States, we're going to have to go past background checks. Yeah, that's part of it, but that's not enough. By the way, Pat Toomey, who with Manchin sponsored the background check bill back when it died that ignominious death I mentioned. Well, he was asked about semi-automatic assault weapons, the kind of rifles that we put in the hands of our military when we send them to war in some godforsaken shithole where they can slaughter brown people. And he said we could never ban things like the AR-15. Why? Well, Pat Toomey's answer, that Republican from Pennsylvania, is that those weapons are too popular. So we know that in the morally bankrupt mind of Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, the popularity of a weapon has more determinative impact on legislation than does the right of a 5-year-old to have living, breathing parents to raise her. Behold the right-wing moral. What it is. Kyle with a note. LOL, that stupid fuck called your show a bitch fest? I guarantee he listens to Hannity, who has on a different maggot lawmaker every week to literally have a bitch fest about how poorly the radical fascist socialist communist leftist Democrats treat them. The dumb fucks are projecting again. Yeah, I know, and he complains and everything, but he's there every night. Yeah, thanks for listening. Contribute, you goddamn deadbeat. Now, see, I'll talk to the right way, to the maggots that way. You freeloading piece of shit. Write a $10,000 check. It costs more to broadcast to ignorant assholes like you. Everybody else, you know, if you can. Right-wing assholes listening to the program? No. You don't get by for free, motherfucker. If you want to write this program, we're gonna send you a bill. Stupid prick. Sorry, I just when you bring that weak ass shit, I'm coming back at you, fuckwit. Steve in New York
says, we also need a massive gun buyback. Yeah, we do. But you know how all those Republicans don't give a fuck about the deficit right now? You talk about a gun buyback, and they'll be deficit hawks again overnight. They will, of course, forget the deficit that they've driven through the skylight with their massive tax cuts for the Jeffrey Epsteins of the world. But no, not if we're going to do a gun buyback. To ban or not to ban, Megan asks, Bob, why do we get caught up in the ban or no ban argument? Why don't we just start licensing the people? Guarantee the insurance costs alone would bankrupt the NRA. Well, that's interesting you would mention that, because in the last couple of days, the mayor of San Jose, California, has caught up with the learning curve presented here at the Horn. The mayor of San Jose is a guy by the name of Sam Liccardo. And he's saying something, and of course it made the news because he's the mayor of San Jose. He wants every gun owner to carry either liability insurance or pay a fee. And he doesn't have any force or weight outside of San Jose. But if you own a gun in San Jose, he wants people to either carry liability insurance or pay a fee to compensate taxpayers for the public costs of firearm violence in America's 10th largest city. Damn, I had no idea San Jose was the 10th largest city in the U.S. Hard to keep up sometimes. Mayor Sam Liccardo says that at least San Jose can do something like that without waiting for Congress to take action. And, of course, it would be constitutionally challenged. But there's no, the right to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, then you're not infringing the right to keep and bear arms. You're merely making sure that people are adequately prepared to keep and bear arms. And what's important about this story is this is an idea that we put forward here in this little community years ago. That's what I mean when I say that if you want to be ahead of the curve, be a part of this community. Because out here, it looks like straight road through Monument Valley. Not Big and Little Sewell in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, where there's not 15 centimeters of straight pavement. This is something we talked about years ago. Now, you can't insure against, I mean, and let's just be straightforward about this. You can't insure against the guy in El Paso. And you can't insure against the guy in Dayton or the guy in Philadelphia or the guy in Gilroy. Those are intentional criminal acts, and insurance companies will not write policies for criminal activity. What an insurance company can and does do is to write insurance policies against negligent acts or unintentional acts. You know, if you're involved in a red car, blue car, rear ender, odds are you did not, unless you're a neo-Nazi in America, of course, mean to drive your car into someone or something. What you have done is engaged in negligence. Negligence, generally defined, is the failure to do that thing which a reasonable, prudent person in the same or similar circumstances would have done or to not do that thing which a reasonably prudent person in the same or similar circumstances would have not done. These are not intentional criminal acts. These are, well, in language far removed from the stentorian high-toned pleadings and monotones of the courtrooms of this country, fuck-ups. You didn't mean to, you just fucked up. And if you sit down and have a cup of coffee in first-year torts in law school, odds are you will find an early case going all the way back to Mary Old Engelond about two members of the king's militia or army or whatever. I mean, this is way back to, you know, like one not a prilly with the sure suit of the truth of march of person to the ruta kind of, right, long time ago. And one soldier, one subject of the crown, injured another subject of the crown, I think, while practicing for being a soldier. You know, hacked his arm off or something. And the guy who got his arm hacked off went to the king and said, I got to have some kind of compensation because I can't be a soldier no more now. Okay, right. He was about to become Australian, and I stopped that real quick. And the other guy said, well, you know, I didn't mean to hurt him. It was, in other words, it was not an intentional act. And the ruling that came down was that all liability is based upon fault. This was literally the first thing I ever learned in law school. All liability is based upon fault. We're not asking if you intended the consequences of your act. We're simply asking, did you do it? And did you do it in such a way that somebody exercising due care would not have done it? And so the one guy had to pay the other guy. Because the other principle that comes out of that is that not even kings can put a hacked off limb back on. But the king can tell you to pay a few quid. No, that's still Australian, isn't it? To the guy whose arm you hacked off. And it comes down through the legal system that way. And so what could happen in this particular scenario is that the insurance companies would calculate the degree of risk associated with gun ownership, and then they would, because they're very good at this kind of statistical gambling, they would determine how much it would cost to insure you against what happens if, say, you negligently leave your loaded gun laying around and your little kid gets it and blows away baby sister. Or what happens if your good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, gun-dementalist, homosexual wife goes to have coffee with her girlfriend and they meet there at the local coffee shop and she's carrying one of them two big bags and she's got her Freedom Protector in it, and you know you're a manly husband, and you told her, you know, honey, if you got an emergency, you got to have one in the chamber because you're never going to have time to rack that slide, and you might be too dainty and delicate to do it anyway, so just you put one in the chamber, and probably buys her a Glock that doesn't even have, you know, a safety, because you're not going to have time to take the safety off of when you've got to defend freedom with your Freedom Protector. You don't want to be fooling with any safeties. And so she goes and she gets her her grande mocha choca bullshit with extra half-calf soy foam. And she goes over to the little teeny tiny round table because there's never enough table space in a goddamn coffee bar. And she sets her purse up on the table. And her friend comes over and sets her purse on the table. And they both sit there drinking their coffee. And one says to the other something. The other one says, "Oh, my stars and garters, I can't believe it." The purse goes, she waves her arm, the purse flies off the table, the gun flies out of the purse, lands on the ground, gun goes off, and, you know, shoots another patron in the leg. And the patron has to be hauled away by EMS, and you know, maybe they got to stop the bleeding because she struck the femoral artery, and... you know, the victim has a couple of $100,000 in medical bills, which her health insurance company says, "We don't pay because you were a victim of an accident and there may be another liable party, so fuck off." And the and then the medical bills pile up. See how it works? So the insurance company would have to calculate the damages out of all of that. And based on all of that, they would then determine how much a policy against those negligent acts, or say a policy against the theft of the weapon and any ensuing crime, that is how insurance works. You know, the insurance company lawyers and actuarials and bean counters and whatever, you know, they determine the fair market value of a millennial's right leg. Because again, insurance companies are good at that. And then they'd have to factor in how much it would cost for them to hire a lawyer to defend the woman whose gun fell out of her purse and shot the millennial through the leg when the person sues her, because the victim has a right to sue. She is the millennial who's been shot through the leg has a cause of action in tort for negligence against the woman who was afraid to go, well, probably whose husband was afraid for her to go for fucking coffee without strapping heat. And all of these things are verifiable numbers. As Mayor Liccardo said to Axios, "Those are all decisions that are influenced in different ways by price signals in the insurance markets. In many cases, we can say insurance has saved thousands of lives because drivers recognize, for example, the benefit of having a discount for an airbag." I don't think there's a way to put an airbag on a fucking pistol. But what Mayor Liccardo really wants to do is, quote, "find ways we can reduce the harm of gun violence without infringing on recognized Second Amendment rights." Because we're just not quite at that place in America where we're smart enough to realize that you really don't need a gun. Most people don't need a gun. Most people in this country who have guns do not need them. And I don't care how paranoid and pasty and doughy they are, and I don't care how many guns they've got, they're never going to hold off the jackbooted federal government when the jackbooted federal government comes and puts their jackbooted jackboots down on their freedom-loving Republican necks next to the tattoo where it says, "Only God can judge me." Because, you know, they're Republicans. That means they're fucking stupid to begin with. David in South Carolina says, "Gun safety. Whatever laws are passed, the carnage will not stop immediately. It is like breaking a 100-mile-an-hour car fully loaded, or a 100-car fully loaded freight train. I hope people realize that there is no single remedy." There isn't. And I think we all recognize that that doesn't mean you just don't do anything anyway. Just because some people run stop signs doesn't mean we take down stop signs. Just because Elaine Chao was let into the United States doesn't mean we eliminate the immigration program, even though letting Elaine Chao into the United States was pretty obviously a horrible, horrible, horrible fuck-up on the part of the immigration system. Yeah, more on the immigration system in a minute. Continuing, David in South Carolina stands as under the subject line, Cold Civil War. I think we have discussed Cold Civil War for as long as I've been listening, and my listening predated the horn. I'm pretty sure, yeah, that we this the Cold Civil War may actually go back to when I came back into radio and got started by filling in for Dr. Bill. That's how long we've been talking about these things. That's how far ahead of the curve we are. Oh, and by the way, for those of you who are wondering, all these little right-wingers that are writing now, they're all the same person. So, sorry. I know you'd like to have some white wingers, some neo-Nazis and some white supremacists to fight with. I don't even know. I'm just looking at them. I'm not even sure. They could all just be bullshit. But it's all the same person. Because they write the same way. Randy in PA writes, we can put a man on the moon. Well, not anymore. But we can't design guns that can indicate that there's one in the chamber. Yeah, no, pistols, and I'm not sure. I've never really handled an AR-15 or anything like that. But yeah, there are pistols that have an indicator that there's one in the chamber. That's the problem, though, that there's one in the chamber. Because with the modern design of pistols, especially, these hammerless affairs, I forget what the technology is for, or the technical name is for them, and I'm sure that just infuriates the little maggots out there. Goddamn, don't know nothing about guns. I know more than I need to know. But it makes them subject to firing if there's one in the chamber, and something strikes it really hard, like a, you know, being dropped on a concrete floor, say, from the same distance that you might drop a cell phone. Ah, well, a little minor cowbell for Jimmy here. Jimmy says, gun safety. An airbag on a gun is called a silencer. Oh, that's probably, sadly, all too true. But Steve says, maybe it was the infamous Brain. Oh, Brain. So inaptly named. Yes. Of course, I once knew a guy named Brain. Parents misspelled it on the birth certificate. They wanted a Brian. They left the hospital with a Brain. It was his middle name. So do me a favor, Horn Family Community Congregation. Keep an eye on this story, if you don't mind. And if any more facts show up, shoot me a note. No, I shouldn't have used the word shoot. Send me a note. But what was said a little bit ago, that it's not all, what David in South Carolina said is absolutely true. There's not going to be a one-off. For instance, Um, in Arkansas, the administrator of a county jail was arrested when Arkansas police chief Jackie Clark put out a statement saying that when police officers had responded to a suspicious persons report and they found 46-year-old Jerry Kelly is the wife of Cross County, Arkansas jail administrator Joe Kelly. And when the cops showed up, they found Jerry Kelly, the wife of the jail administrator, drawing down on four young people whom she had compelled to lay on the ground. And by young people, I mean children. Jerry Kelly was charged with four counts of aggravated assault, false imprisonment, and endangering the welfare of a minor. Somehow or another, they couldn't come up with a mugshot for Jerry Kelly, the jail administrator's wife, when they took her to the jail, because she had a medical issue when they were trying to book her. And they couldn't take a picture of her. The four children were selling discounted cards or discount cards. You've probably seen them. God knows I have. For school football games. And that's when Mrs. Kelly drew down on them with her freedom protector. I guess it goes without saying, but I'll say it anyway. The four little kids that she was threatening to murder in cold blood on the spot were four little black children. Because Arkansas. Wolverines! Yeah, I miss my reverb. But I'm kind of getting a feel from the whole concept of prayer meeting Wednesday. And by the way, we got $200 to raise this evening. We're near the top of the first hour. We're at zero. And hopefully that will not remain the case for the next 2 hours. Let's not let Arkansas take all the grief, though. Let's go to Royal Oak, Michigan, where some police officers got caught on video. Wow. A lot of people who know their history will know that once upon a time in this country, there were unwritten, off-the-book laws that were used in brutal fashion. One was called the Eyeball Law, and the other was called the Step-Off Rule. And what those meant was that if you were an African-American person and a white person was walking toward you, you did not look them in the eye, and if there wasn't enough room on the sidewalk, you stepped off into the roadway, which often meant stepping off into the mud. This is pre-pavement. Devin Myers is 20 years old. He got shaken down by officers of the Royal Oak, Michigan Police Department while he was walking into the In-Season Cafe. He was approached because a white woman said he looked at her suspiciously after what happened. Bless their hearts, the in-season cafe covered Mr. Meyer's meal. The white lady was not charged for being a racist asshole. And the cops eventually let him go after inquiring as to whether or not he had looked at the white woman suspiciously. In other words, the eyeball law. The eyeball rule. Well, you know, based on what we talked about last night, I guess those fine researchers down at Clemson University will blame Mother Russia for the fact that the country is finding out about this racist white lady. Jesus. It's just murka. But hey, cops with issues relative to race are an existential threat to a lot of people in this country. The New York Post had a story of about the president of the second largest cop union in New York City. That guy is Ed Mullins. Ed Mullins sent out a video. He forwarded it. That had come from the Sergeant's Benevolent Association. He emailed it to thousands of police sergeants. Ed Mullins did. In his message, he said, "Pay close attention to every word. You will hear what goes through the mind of real policemen every single day on the job. This is the best video I've ever seen telling the public the absolute truth." Well, it turns out the video is about 15 minutes long. And the narrator says, "One of the most astonishing aspects of police work in an urban environment is that almost literally no one has a job." And then for the next 15 minutes goes off on racist tirades. Caught, cop union president Mullins said, "Well, I just sent it out. I didn't watch it." Well, then how did you know that it was the best video I've ever seen telling the public the absolute truth? Well, instead of answering anything complicated like that, he said, "I have black friends, white friends, Asian friends. I wouldn't want to insult anyone. I don't think one incident defines who I am." Well, you know, that's the problem. It's not just one incident. There's a history of Sergeants Benevolent Association, that's the name of the cop union, doing other sleazy, underhanded, racist, filthy shit like this. But naturally, Mullins puts forward the defense of, "Hey, I got some black friends. All right, fuck out of here." You can't get any more pro-union than me. But even I have to wonder about the efficacy and usefulness of cop unions. And we haven't heard from Steve Cantaloupe's King in a while. It being prayer meeting Wednesday, he's a good Christian. There are apparently in Iowa still places that Steve Cantaloupe's King, who keeps or at least kept until he got caught, a Confederate flag on his desk, sort of spitting on the memory of the heroic Iowans who fought in defense and on behalf of freedom at places like Shiloh, Pittsburgh Landing in 1862, that spring morning. Over at the Des Moines Register, apparently they've discovered that King is still welcome at the West Side Conservative Club, wherein Steve Cantaloupe's King went all social Darwin. What if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled out anyone who was a product of rape or incest? Now, the reason he's doing this is because he opposes rape and incest exemptions in anti-abortion laws. What if we went back through all the family trees and just pulled out anyone who was a product of rape or incest? Would there be any population of the world left if we did that? Considering all the wars and all the rapes and pillages that happened throughout all these different nations, I know I can't say that I was not a part of a product of that. So there would be no humanity on the planet were it not for rape and incest. Probably should have held this for Moran Monday or even Titanic Tuesday. He holds to the party line that to simply recognize the constitutional right of a woman to maintain the workings of her own body the same way that we recognize the constitutional right of pasty-faced, doughy men to buy 100 guns. Well, if she was to abort a baby because she'd been raped or because she got Uncle Daddied, then that would punish the baby for the sin of the father or of the mother. Opening another rhetorical can of worms for Steve Cantaloupe's King. Can of worms, cantaloupe, see what I did there? Don't try this at home. The sin of the father or of the mother? Anybody care to give me a little help on the sin of the mother in a rape? Or the sin of a little 13-year-old girl whose daddy gets to rutting on her? What's her sin there? Maybe somebody could ask Ivanka. Also in that West Side Conservative Club diatribe, Steve Cantaloupe's King went on to say that he was proud that back when he got in trouble for asking why white nationalists and white supremacists were disgusting phrases, that one of the few Republicans who didn't crawl his ass was the blessed, sacred, holy Donald J. Trump. Completely oblivious, of course, to the fact that that sort of means that, no, it doesn't sort of mean. It means that Donald Trump is the same kind of, well, white supremacist that Steve King is. But they're all over the place. Let's check in with the guy we know as the Cooch. Proud son of the Old Dominion of Virginia, Ken Cuccinelli. He's the acting, because everybody's acting in this regime, he's the acting U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services Director. And he's been sort of boiling himself in oil for a while now over this latest announced immigration plan to try to keep the brown people out of here on the claim that they're not very good and not rich enough. I guess when you do a job like this and the Booker calls from CNN, you say, sure, I'll come on your program.
You say this is about self-sufficiency, and you say that proudly. You heard me play this morning when you quoted the Emma Lazarus poem on the Statue of Liberty.
Oh, I wasn't quoting it. I was answering a question.
Right, okay, I'm sorry. But you were giving your version of what you thought the poem should say, right?
No, I was not.
You said, give me your tired and your poor who can stand on...
I'm not rewriting poetry.
Okay, what you said is, give me your tired and your poor who can stand on...
Yeah, he's not rewriting poetry, except when he's, well, you know, rewriting poetry.
Not rewriting poetry.
Okay, what you said is, give me your tired and your poor who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge. I just played you saying it.
Right, I listened.
Okay, so I'm just making sure you're not just putting it. Okay, so obviously the actual poem is quite different. I'm going to read it.
Right, I was answering a question. I wasn't writing poetry, Aaron. Don't change the facts.
I'm not changing the facts.
You're twisting this like everybody else on the left has done all day today.
No, because I think it's important. You're saying...
Everybody else on the left.
That it's very important to be able to stand on your own two feet. A lot of people may support you and respect your saying that. But the poem doesn't say that. Right? The poem that's on the Statue of Liberty.
I didn't bring up the poem. Well, an NPR reporter did, and now you have. Okay, I didn't bring it up. I'll answer your substantive intelligence questions.
So I'm going to give you a substantive...
But I'm not going to ask the questions you ask about the unintelligent thing I did with an American icon, namely Emma Lazarus's poem. And he's going to try to overtalk her. And whoever's running the engineering on this isn't going to pot down his mic so she can overtalk him, even though he richly deserves it.
Okay, however it came up, you said, give me your tired and your poor, okay, who can stand on their own two feet and who will not become a public charge. That's what you said. I just played it. The poem reads...
Which is interesting because the poor really can't stand on their own two feet and haul themselves up by their good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, Republican bootstraps because they're poor. And, of course, the Cooch here, I guess, doesn't realize that, something on the order of 10% of immigrant families actually even use public assistance? That the vast majority of people who use public assistance in this country are, white.
It's give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of the teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. Wretched, poor refuse, right? That's what the poem says America's supposed to stand for. So, what do you think America stands for?
Well, of course, that poem was referring back to people coming from Europe where they had class-based societies.
Where they were white.
Where people were considered wretched if they weren't in the right class. And it was introduced, it was written 1 year, 1 year.
Ah, we found one of the shortcomings of the... of the system here. So we've got a Skype call. I'm going to ask you to remain silent until after the audio clip is done. Where were we? It was written 1 year, 1 year, 1 year.
any person unable to take care of himself without becoming a public charge, unquote, would be inadmissible, or in the terms that my agency deals with, they can't do what's called adjusting status, getting a green card, becoming legal permanent resident.
Right. So that poem was written 1 year after the United States passed a racist law and an economically bigoted law. So maybe it wound up on the Statue of Liberty as a, I don't know, form of protest?
Same exact time, Aaron, same exact time. And the year it went on the Statue of Liberty, 1903, another federal law was passed expanding the elements of public charge by Congress. This is a.
I mean, when my family came here, they came here as crofters from Scotland, right? They had no education, they had nothing.
Right.
But I am here because they were allowed in, and I'm an anchor on CNN.
Right.
So I'm just saying, I wouldn't be here.
My Italian grandfather sponsored his two cousins to come here. This is a tradition that many of our families, yours and mine, can point to.
Yours and my white families, yes. And speaking of those, you know, Scots, Irish, there was no sufficiency requirement when mine came here. They got here, they landed in Philly, and they were told to keep moving. And they wanted to keep moving. They wanted to go to Stanton, Virginia, because they had an uncle there who had built a jail. And when they got there, they didn't have any self-sufficiency. They just started stealing land from the Native Americans. You know, it's often said that slavery is the original sin of this country. And I don't disagree with that. But it sort of pokes a finger in the eye of the people who were here for 10,000 years or more before anybody from the Eastern Hemisphere showed up. Because the original sin was genocide. Started in 1492. When Columbus, the psychopath that he was, started remarking on how easy it would be to enslave the natives that he had run into, because they were just such nice people. And then in 1519, exactly 500 years ago, Cortez shows up in the most civilized city on earth and initiates a genocide that wipes out tens of millions of people. This was, of course, as I've said before, the most densely and successfully populated portion of the world. And then after the English and French and Dutch and, yes, even Swedish and Spanish genocide of North America, millions more died. And they died of disease, they died of murder, and they died of displacement. And in a way, this stupid new policy from the Trump regime points to the idea that the Trumpansies, the maggots, the cooches of the world, now see themselves as indigenous to this hemisphere, and they're afraid that there are people who are related to the people who were here all along who might displace them. This entire immigration thing, they say, yeah, it's white nationalist. Yes, it's white supremacist. But you know what it also is? It is based in that's why, with ideas of displacement,
right. This is not an exclusionary.
No, but what I'm saying is I would have been excluded. I don't know about you, but I would have been.
Well, no, That's not, you're deciding on one point. And our ISOs are going to take what's called a totality of the circumstances test, which has been long been the test.
Oh, and by the way, since we're talking about displacement, what was it that the Nazis were chanting in Charlottesville? Jews will not replace us. You will not replace us. And there's the cooch, practically repeating word for word the filth of the white supremacist, neo-Nazi, skinhead, Klan base of this filthy president's political party. Note coming in from Brother Deacon Asa. There would not be any humanity in the world were it not for rape and incest, going back to Steve Cantaloupe's King. I agree with Steve Hammerskin's King on this one, Bob. Please remember, God done raped Mary in order to conceive his only begitting son. True. Meanwhile, Les, I don't know if Les is on the road or not, but this, I love when maggot snowflakes right into bitch. Brain, is that you? Pay like you weigh, sucker. I guess we're waiting to find out if this one little wingnut is gonna. Don't count on it. Don't count on it. And I think we got. I think we've got Todd on the line. Hey, Todd, welcome to prayer meeting.
Hey, is this Bob's Burgers?
Yeah, it is. You want fries with that?
No, I do. I want one order of murder, one displacement, three diseases, and a side of fries.
Oh, well, the displacement costs extra. We deliver those in Hugo Boss uniforms.
Well, I would hope so. There's so much preposterous shit stuff going on right now. This is ridiculous, man. I could not believe when I was reading The Hill and I read that byline. Not the byline, but, you know, the headline. Steve King. What in the hell is his problem? I think he has the syphilis, too.
He may have the syphilis. The spirochetes may have gotten to him, too. God knows he's weird enough.
I mean, he doesn't know when
What undiseased woman would have sex with him?
Oh, but you know, when I read the first headline, I was like, "Oh, that sounds like Lot's wife. That's what he's talking about." You know, that's what he's saying.
By the way, Agnes just chimed in. This thing does such a good job that she couldn't get past all the technology. But she said, "When I said what non-diseased woman would have sex with Steve King," the boss hollered through the wall, "Not willingly."
He's just a nasty looking man anyway. He just looks like angry. Like he I don't know what's wrong with him, man. He's dangerous.
Well, it's like Ron and Raleigh said, the sin of the woman or girl is the hussy was flaunting her female parts like elbows and shoulders and ankles and so forth. P.S. The cooch is a shit heel.
Oh, we hadn't gotten to him yet. Can we go back to
you want to go through? You want to work on Mr. Cantaloupe's a little bit more?
Just a little bit. Is this the same guy that said just put the ass from between your legs?
No, it's not. That was a multimillionaire Republican donor.
Okay. Well, he got a pass on that one. All right. Well, all right. My bad on that. But he's still reprehensible. Whatever. He's worthless.
Get your vocabulary right. He's deplorable.
Thank you for correcting me. I have to get my I forgot the index card. I missed that class. I'm sorry.
No, don't worry about it. But I think we need to, you know, when these people say this filthy shit, we need to refer to them as what they fucking are. Deplorable. Because I want everybody to remember. I want people to learn it all the way down into their genetic substructures that Hillary Clinton was right about them.
She was so low-key about it. She was so low-key about it. But she was correct.
Inartful, perhaps, but absolutely correct.
And you see where we are now, right? It's so much. It's just so much. We're in the cesspool now, and you see what the stock market is doing. We're in the cesspool. We're in the cesspool.
Yeah, you know, I don't. I don't often do the economic stuff because it's not in my wheelhouse. But yeah, this was today. Wasn't today the biggest Wall Street loss of the year?
Oh, it had to be. Oh,
and didn't the short-term bond yield exceed the long-term bond yield for the first time since the run-up to the Great Recession in 2007? Didn't that happen today or the late next day or so? Yeah, didn't it? Yeah, it did.
Yeah. And there's an inextricable profanity of how it connects where what happened today. You know what's coming. In other words, there's like 9 out of 10. We're into a recession now. Like when this happens, you know a recession. But we knew that was coming anyway. This is a
bullshit. Well, Trump recession began trending today as a hashtag.
It should have. I'm glad it's happening on his watch. I'm so happy for that. That's the only thing I can say. This was bound to happen.
Well, the thing is, the stuff that was put in play by Obama was working so doggone. All he had to do was not fuck it up, but he starts these stupid trade wars, and away we go.
Now look, I'm not an economics person. I just look at trends. But I mean, my God, I have I talk with people. I know what the hell's going on with that a little bit. Just don't fuck with it. Just leave it alone. You look at the big curve. The big graph, it's like, okay, we're steadily going up. That's what you want, a plodding, slow uptick. You don't need this spike. Spikes are not good in any way or reason, no. But, this is some fucked up shit. But, yuck. This is like a big loogie in your throat. We have to spit it out.
Well, okay, yeah. So that's dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. Okay, just checking. Loogies.
Before
we go to the cooch, I need some local knowledge. Tell me about Nicetown in Philly.
I'm so glad you brought that up because it's really why I called. Honest to God, do you know how many professionals are? That is a nice. I'm telling. Nicetown is not that nice. Let me get that out there. Nicetown back, like when your people came over there, it was nice. A little after that. But
that's probably why they told my folks to keep moving.
Yeah, they didn't want them around there. It was just mostly Germans. If you notice, look at those top of the buildings. I've been following this on the local news, on the local ABC 6, NBC 10, but I haven't seen what the national news shows yet. But if you notice the tops of some of those row houses, you'll see it looks like Dutch. Looks like Amsterdam, if you look closely, the architecture. Those are some beautiful. Those houses are huge.
Well, like, I guess it's somewhere close to Temple because Temple University put out a shelter in place for everybody in their classrooms.
It's blocks away from the medical campus, and it's just three subway stops away from the main campus. And so Temple owns a lot of that area right around there. And so I'll give you the background on that. All right. There is no street-level drug dealing, and that's actually not a bad neighborhood. It's actually getting better. And it's really not a bad neighborhood. That's a major transportation hub. Like, that was – I can't tell you, I spent most of my life going through that area, going home and back and forth to work. Okay, this is what I'm saying. And you can tell, like, back in the day, let's say the 40s, the 30s, 40s, 50s. As a matter of fact, I just talked to my father like a few minutes ago, and he was telling me he lived in that area, and he's a jazz guy, that place is jumping. It's an intersection of a lot of streets. And on the other side, see, Broad Street, You remember Broad Street when you were in Philly, right?
Sure.
Okay. If Broad Street had a number, it would be 14th Street, but it's Broad Street. Now, this incident is at 15th and Butler, which is just one block over to the west. Now, when you go on the other side of Broad Street, on the east side, that's where mostly Spanish-speaking people live because of redlining and this and that. But the only thing that goes on there is real high-level narcotics. Okay, real high-level. There's nothing on the street there, and usually it's very peaceful. But, see, those houses they're very large and beautiful. They have, like, marble and they have wood mantles and fireplaces. They're very nice. And some of them are cut up into apartments, like, because there's three floors in the basement. So then someone might be cut up into three flats, right, and a basement. And then someone who owns a house, you know, they rent it out or rent out rooms, this and that. But they have
Airbnb.
Right. Well, yeah, maybe. I don't know about that. But maybe. Who knows? You know, things change. But they have earthen floors. So there might be some tunnels underneath, and that's not unheard of. You know, that's a big thing to do. Like, if you're engaged in that type of activity, you might want to have a tunnel. Because if somebody has a warrant, if the authorities have a warrant, you know, it has to be for a specific residence. Now, you have a tunnel two houses down, and if you're making that kind of money, you can buy the whole block. I mean, that's not unheard of. You can buy the whole block. You're making money like that. You can buy the whole block. And so, because think how much firepower this dude. I've been watching this live on the news. There's a lot of people going to die after this. This is going to be really ugly. And remember,
wait, why do you say that? What does that mean?
Well, Philly cops are not nice to begin with. Okay, period. And when one gets hurt, look, they're out for blood now. They're going to beat some heads in. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be very ugly. So people are going to be on their best manners now for the next month or so. But what I'm trying to say is that this is like a lot of people who live off in my area in Germantown. I mean, if you take public transit, the subway stop is Broad and Erie. It's right there. It's like one block from where it happened. One block. Like my bus, I'm telling you, I know this place like the back of my hand. I mean, I used to ride my bike to work or take the, you know, a lot of times it was fast for me to ride my bike to work. Ride right through there.
Oh, the latest reports that six officers were shot. They've tighten the description a little bit to say the Nice Town Tioga section.
Mm-hmm.
Another officer got hurt in a car crash trying to get to the scene. The date on this, timestamp on this is 8 minutes ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they say the scene is still active where gunfire can be heard.
See?
And then here we go again. It almost feels like cause and effect. So yesterday we had the story about how the Trump regime wants to censor the internet, and now CBS 3 Philly Action News Eyewitness Team coverage. Sources tell CBS 3 the suspect was live streaming some of the shootout while he barricaded himself inside a building. The source says authorities are working to shut the live stream down.
Uh-oh, I don't like that. They should not talk about that. Because you know they've been flaunting, whoever's been in power for the last two presidencies, they've been letting us know they have the switch.
One of the cops was shot near Temple University Hospital.
Right.
It had to do with the service of a warrant in the 3700 block of North 15th Street. The shooting started at about 4:30. And, yeah, narcotics activity.
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting?
They were serving a warrant. They were serving a warrant. Mm-hmm.
What's interesting, though, is that earlier today I was reading a story, and it has to do with the opioid crisis. And it said that, it was centered in Philadelphia. And it was talking about people lining up for the Boop bus. You heard me right.
Mm-hmm. No.
And what that and what that refers to is buprenorphine.
Right.
Who's
Suboxone?
Suboxone, exactly.
Suboxone, because they want to get off it, and the buses there in the neighborhood. I was following that. Remember, I lived in that in the terrible the Badlands, what they call Kensington, the Badlands. I lived there for a year with someone, so I figured out it wasn't going to work. And right, that's another story.
Well, what I find interesting, and there we if there's a narcotics warrant involved, okay, it's a big city. But on the same day that I read a story about the Boop Bus in Philly that writes prescriptions so people can legitimately have access, addicts can have legitimately have access to buprenorphine. Mm-hmm. I think I'm saying it right.
Right, Suboxone.
Suboxone. They went on to report. I think it was an NPR story. Let me see if I've got it pulled here.
That's where I heard it. It was on like 2 days ago or yesterday, 2 days ago. Morning Edition had it.
Yeah, there it is. It's the go-to drug to treat opioid addiction. Why won't more pharmacies stock it? And they talk about how people who get licensed to dispense it, it then becomes a magnet for illegal activity outside their store because they take their scripts and they go outside and they just sell it.
Right.
And that if you take it in its pill form, it works as advertised, but that people like to cook it and inject it, in which case, since it does share some chemical similarities to other opioids, it can provide a little bit of some sort of shitty little high.
They say it gets you through.
And what's weird about this is, so that story's out there yesterday, maybe?
Mm-hmm.
And then this happens today.
Well, this is why it's weird and not weird. I guess a lot of folks don't understand. For whatever reason, I don't know why. I really don't know why. But Philadelphia has the purest heroin on the street that you can get in the whole country. I mean, like the neighborhood. I used to live in the Badlands. I lived there for 1 year. And I'm telling you, I was a middle-aged man before I even set foot in that part of the city. I didn't even know how expansive the east part of the city was because that's where all the ethnic white folks live. We didn't go over there. You know, the Puerto Ricans and the ethnic white folks lived over there. And that's where all, like, the really, really, like, big dope shit was. So we didn't go over there. But that's where I live. And you would see license plates from Iowa and Michigan and all over the place. And then, you know, everybody who lives there in Philly knows that, like, that is the place. In other words, you could buy shit. You could buy what they call a bundle. You know, that's like 10 glassine envelopes of heroin, dirt cheap, off the street, and go wherever you live and like, triple, quadruple your money. Because it's basically pure dope. It's better than New York.
In other words, it's pure capitalism.
It's pure capitalism. I don't know why it's like that. But remember, they had the biggest cocaine bust there maybe a month or two ago?
I think while I was there.
You know, they were still counting. They found more. They kept looking in that. They had confiscated that tanker, which was a massive cargo ship. You know, one of those cargo ships where you put the metal cargo things in, you know, the Maersk, the kind you can
put container ship.
Container ship, that's what I'm trying to say, right. So, and none of that stuff goes on without the government knowing, though. That's the thing. How can something that large go on without the government knowing? But I'm just saying from what I saw from living, you know, and like, I've lived in great places and terrible places. And I'm just telling you that it ain't about no weed. That I'm telling you that. And most folks there, nobody smokes no crack. I mean, only like this, like, damn, man, nobody smokes no crack up there anymore. That's just, you know, like affluent people do coke. Nobody smokes crack. That shit's passe. It's about the heroin now. So that's what I'm thinking, because that is not a bad neighborhood. I'm telling you. I mean, really, that is not. People take care of their houses. They may not look nice to a lot of people, but those are nice old row houses. Those houses were built just after the turn of the century, because I'm in the touchstones, you know, the cornerstones, like when you see when something is built.
Yeah, and you can't help stopping and reading.
No, I can't. I'm a history person. You know, it's just, and you know, and that's the gateway to Germantown. See, you got to go through there to get to Germantown when you take a public transit.
Public transit is in a complete mess. They're reporting that SEPTA's Broad Street Line trains are bypassing Erie, Allegheny, and Hunting Park stations. The express trains will make a courtesy stop at North Philadelphia Station. SEPTA bus routes 2356 H and XH are currently on detour. The city is gridlocked. Most of North Philly is gridlocked. God help somebody if they need an ambulance for a heart attack or something like that.
Right. And Temple Hospital already handles, you know, most of the gunshot victims in North Philadelphia and, you know, on the east side and west side. But if you don't go to Temple, you go up to the top of Broad Street to Einstein. Because once you leave Einstein, you're in Montgomery County. You're up in the Jenkintown, in that area. And I know you got a couple of listeners who live in that area. I've heard some folks call in. But this is like a big fucking deal right here. This is a big fucking deal. Did you see how many police are on the ground there?
Yeah, it's like an army.
It's an army. They're not fucking around. They're going to fuck some people up. But it's not over yet. It is not over yet. So this is really ugly, man. I don't know where this is going to end, man. This heroin thing. Now we've got a whole nother, one or two generations now hooked on this shit. This is fucked up. This is really fucked up. This is just terrible.
Okay, but wait. Let's consider how disgusting the circumstances have become in this country. And I'm not diminishing this at all. But I imagine it's easy. Oh, I don't know if I can get through this without getting this all wrong. But I'm saying it for all the. Oh, stop it. I imagine there are some people saying, well, at least it's not a Walmart and at least it's not a white, you know, a white kid with an AK-47. I mean, it's a drug bust. This, you know, we tune in TV shows to watch this go down. Dum dum. You know what I mean?
It's more. Yeah. Well, this is more than just a drug bust. This is a disruption. I'm telling you, that is a main artery to the northwest part of the city where I used to live. And that's where a lot of professionals live. There are many people. It's not worth it to drive to work. You know what it costs to park? Nobody's driving their fucking car during the week. Are you kidding?
You go broke.
Come on. You go broke. That's, and plus, you can't even, where are you going to park? People take the train. And you know, Wayne Junction is right there. That's a very interesting part of the city, man. See, it hooks up with a lot of different areas right there. You know, and Montgomery County dips down. Like, Philadelphia's shaped like a weird kind of Y. You know, it's kind of a weird Y. Imagine a Y, but the left side of the top of the Y is a little shorter. You know, I'm getting too intricate here. But what I'm saying, oh, my God, it's raining hard as hell. Jesus. Yeah, so this is, but six cops getting shot, and it's not over yet. They're still out there. It's still an active scene. See, that's what I'm saying. There's some tunnels. Now, the only reason I suspect this, because when I lived in the Badlands, Kensington, the Badlands, it's common knowledge. Like there were these people they called Ortiz people. They owned a whole block, and they knocked out three or four row houses in the middle of the block. They had a courtyard, and they owned every house left and right. So if the authorities came to serve a warrant, you got to go to one address or two addresses. But they had tunnels. Because remember, these are old row houses. They have earthen basements, you see.
You've got a kind of a geography question coming from David in South Carolina, Stan, your not too distant neighbor. I used to go from 30th Street Station to Trenton. I cannot tell if this is near there.
No, not really. 30th Street is on the west center city. That's going out toward Penn. And then, I know that's the R7. The R7 would take you to Trenton. So that's what he would take, which is a nice ride. That's actually the best way to go to New York. That's a cheap way to go to New York. My God, you go to Trenton, and then you get another train to the PATCO, New Jersey Transit, and you're in New York. But no, this neighborhood hugs Broad Street in North Philadelphia. And it's not that far from Montgomery County, honestly, because that Y I was talking about, it dips down. So the next big neighborhood is Logan, and then Olney, and then you're out of the city. And it's weird. It's just when you cross that line, it's kind of totally different. But this is not a bad neighborhood. That's what I'm telling you. You don't see people on this. There's nobody standing on the corner selling a dope in that neighborhood. Period. Those are nice. People are taking care of those houses. Those are expensive houses. And what those houses run for? Those are expensive houses. They may not look like it, but those are expensive houses. You talking
north of $500,000?
Not that much, but like 250, 300.
Yeah.
You know, those are nice houses. They're massive because you cut them up into apartments and flats. So, like, you can have a whole floor. And there are lots of windows because when they built those houses, electricity was just being brought into dwellings. You know, these are turn-of-the-century houses. You know, they have fireplaces, like, going straight up. Some of them still work, some of them don't. And when you see the nightly news tonight, you know, if you notice the architecture, you'll see, like, for instance, in Amsterdam, if you look at the tops of buildings, they have, like, a little crown kind of thing that goes up. Like, the front, if you look at a princess's crown, it kind of goes up in the middle and comes down, has a little peak on it, and that's the way those houses look. In other words, there's a certain way that houses in Amsterdam look, because Eastern Europeans built those houses, and Germans. You know, that's what I call it, Germany. That's like the bottom of Germantown. Those are the people who built those houses. I mean, there's a street called Mannheim Street, not far from there. But to answer David's question, this is North Philadelphia, like the top of Broad Street. But there's going to be a lot of blowback from this. This reminds me of when this guy shot a cop. When I was still in the city and in Philadelphia, and he escaped to Miami. But I remember we were in a car accident, and a cop was like, "Oh, just go. We're looking for the cop killer." Like everything stopped. No, nothing's going on now. Everybody's focused on, because you got to remember, in a sociological sense, police are a gang.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean. That's like the racist head of the second largest cop union in New York. That's not slamming. That's a reality.
No.
They are a legally authorized gang. And wasn't the first police force in the United States in Philadelphia? So aren't they the nation's oldest police force?
I would think so. Because before New York. But this is going to be, like, nightly news is going to be interesting tonight. Because they said, like, you know, I was watching the local feed and talking with my friends.
Well, so are you saying that this guy very well may be shot trying to escape?
Well, the last I checked, there's still a policeman trapped in that building. Which means he's holding them hostage or he's killed them.
Jesus. Which,
that would be stupid. You know, and they don't play that. Man.
Oh, shit, that's Billy. They may bomb the whole neighborhood.
It's happened before, hasn't
it? I was going to say, yeah, I mean, I'm not saying that. It's happened before.
I mean,
what was that? What was that, Move?
Move, man. Yeah. And, you know, if people thought Move was just black folk, do you understand that the Ramona Africa, now she's still alive, those were intelligent people. They knew what the system was. They did not want to work with the system. They said, fuck the system, because they knew it would end up just like what's happening now. Now, they were out West Philly. Now, David wants to talk about West Philly. See, that was a Powelton village, Osage Avenue. They, you know, look, a lot of people had sympathy for Move. Some people didn't like him. Some people did. You know, they got a lot of help. But they were railroaded. They were railroaded, yeah. Man. Philly's corrupt. Philly's corrupt. But, you know, that's, most cities are corrupt. But this Cuccinelli dude, what the fuck was he?
Well, interesting you should ask, because I've got a note here from Flavio. More on Ken Cuccinelli, three short paragraphs, emphasis in bold. The former Virginia Attorney General joined the Trump administration in late May. His background includes trying to eliminate birthright citizenship, questioning whether Barack Obama was born in the United States, and proposing to make speaking Spanish on the job a fireable offense. He introduced legislation that would have allowed employers to fire those who didn't speak English in the workplace. Under his plan, those fired would have subsequently been ineligible for unemployment benefits. He was the nation's first attorney general to file a lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act and LGBTQ rights, including his defense of a state law prohibiting sodomy, which was struck down in 2013, and his attempt to remove sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes within state universities' non-discrimination policies. As Flavio says, that's the cooch.
That's disgusting.
He's a white nationalist. He's a white supremacist. Todd, entire Republican Party is awash in them. They couldn't win an election for dog catcher without the white nationalists, the white supremacists, the neo-Nazis, the neo-fascists, the Klansmen, the skinheads. It's who they are. Cue up Denny Green again. They are who we thought they were.
They are who they thought we were. Ooh, I didn't say that right. Okay.
And by the way, I gotta backtrack just a minute to a note from Darlene. Todd raises a great point. Why are the nastiest looking men the most dangerous? Trump, King, Barr, McConnell, Gohmert, Jordan, etc. Because, I mean, you know Elaine Chao did not marry Mitch McConnell for his looks.
Elaine Chao's kind of hot, if you ask me. That's an attractive looking woman.
Oh, let's don't go there. I prefer to think of her as a massive failure of the United States immigration system. That's all.
I'm not talking about her credentials and her
because see, one of the
Well, what the hell is she doing with that troll?
Well, he had power and she had money. See how it works?
Let me say this, and maybe this sounds wrong, but I'm saying this. I would not trust little children around Mitch McConnell. If anything looks like a pedophile, it's Mitch McConnell. I'm just saying.
Well, I generally wouldn't trust little children around Republicans. I've said that for years.
That's true.
I wouldn't trust little children around a Southern Baptist minister.
Oh, well, that's very true.
Well, Southern Baptist ministers are Republicans. Okay?
I mean, look at him, man. He looks like a little praying mantis with his weird eyes and like, ooh, come here. And his, I don't, what the hell? Ew. I can't be the only one. I'm not, I know I'm not. I've been asking people about this. I've had people even say this before I said it. So there's some meat on that bone. I'll put it like that.
I mentioned Elaine Chao, and for that matter, you know, Melanoma's parents, they didn't have scratch. But one of the dirty underbelly, little appreciated, little known facts of the American immigration system is that you can buy your way in. If you've got enough money, they don't look twice. Come on in. And that's how we wind up with Elaine Chao helping to fuck up America.
Okay, there's two things I want to mention on that. You've gone down that street. Number one, because of my different positions in my professional career, I've been around a lot of immigrants at different levels. And what I've seen from first-generation immigrants is that they really do. They come over here with a different mindset. They are eager to work. They believe in the American dream. They are not quote-unquote lazy at all.
This very well looks like paradise, especially if you're coming from somewhere that the United States has spent a generation or two fucking up. I think back to that wonderful pho restaurant that Chris found an iteration of in Philly. It was delightful. It was pho for breakfast is an amazing thing. And the name of the chain, and it was started in the D.C. area, Northern Virginia, because there was a big settlement of post-war Vietnamese in Northern Virginia, and they have made it a more interesting place by far than it had previously been. And the name of the restaurant chain is Pho 75, P-H-O 75.
Oh, yeah.
And the 75 is there in the name because
the boatload. Those are the folks that came over.
That's when they came over. And they got busy and they opened up a restaurant. And it was delicious. It was delicious. Those raw.
I love Vietnamese food. Vietnamese food has got the flavor of the. That's like the perfect Asian food.
What made it though was Chris knew about it and therefore was able to order it. The eye of round was sliced thinner than you'd slice it for a Philly cheesesteak. Yeah, and so they bring it to the table with your pho raw, and the pho is so hot that it cooks the meat in it.
Holy cow.
And tender and flavorful, and you can just pick up one of those rolled up, and you can just kind of roll it up on your chopsticks and, you know, douse it, and then you over in the little dish you mix the oyster sauce and the sriracha and the plum sauce together, and you dip it. Oh, it's heavenly.
You get your sweet hot going on.
And then for the beverage, I'd never had it. Salty, salty sour plum soda.
Wow.
And it was tangy and tart, and it must have been 95 degrees outside on the parking lot there. But it was tangy, and it was tart, and it was salty, and it was ice cold. Oh, I'd never
had that. Was that on Race Street or Arch Street?
Ah, God, I can't remember. We went down Broad the other side of City Hall.
Okay.
Is there a Washington Street down there somewhere?
Washington Avenue,
yeah,
down deep South Philly. Okay, that's where a lot of Southeast Asian immigrants come to. My own,
and you know, I get so committed to my imagery. I'm sitting here. If we had video, you'd see me. I'm sitting here with my chopsticks, my imaginary chopsticks, holding my imaginary steak with the imaginary sauce on it, and I just caught myself going to set it down on the desk.
See? Wow.
And the place was across from a bunch of U-Haul self-storage inside old warehouse buildings that still had the markings of the old tobacco warehouse up at the cornerstone of the roof.
Oh.
It was like Acme Tobacco's, your symbol for quality fresh tobacco.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
Look, there's a lot of good food to be had for a reasonable price in Philadelphia, man. It's the hidden gem. I mean, you can eat. I love the La Birkin at Temple, man, because every day God, you take one of your lunch partners or, cool co-worker and jump on the train. Because remember, I was one subway stop, Temple stop, to boom. You get on the train, the next stop is downtown at Jefferson Station. It used to be called Market East, now it's Jefferson Station. It's a lot of good food, man. But I understand what you're saying about the thinly cut meat and putting that sauce in the acid just cooks the meat, and it's just...
And you know, you're adding the bean sprouts, and you're shredding the basil, and you're tearing up the fresh jalapeno, and you're squeezing the lime, and yeah.
See, that keeps you coming back. Then you're just thinking about, what am I going to get next time?
And see, that was the morning after the night that I had that awesome bowl of ramen.
Well, the good noodles. Oh, hell yeah. Yeah.
And that's the only thing that's stopping me from my current quest to make homemade ramen with the pork broth and everything here. I can't find the goddamn noodles.
You're going to go to that Asian store.
I got to get down into the Kanawha Valley and see if we got one there. Or at least, if nothing else, I'll stop next time we do a D.C. trip. I'll stop at that humongous international world of food you can't get at Walmart and bring home a load of refrigerated fresh ramen. Or even dried, but not the stuff in the package. No, not with the flavor.
Well, I have to say that stuff in the cup that I can get now in my local food supermarket. Now, it's not the ramen that you get in the cellophane pack that we grew up with in college. It's the new generation. And matter of fact, I had one today because I was in a rush.
Speaking of which, I don't know if you were listening last night, but I got one. You got to take one for the team.
What?
Because apparently it's available in your local Walmart.
Oh, fuck.
Those Quaker instant grits with the ham and red eye gravy flavor.
Oh, I heard you got. I never knew that coffee. I did hear that. Oh, you and Scott were on the roll. I did hear that. But what the fuck? I never knew that. Coffee grounds? Like, what do you?
No, not coffee grounds. Coffee, not the grounds.
So you deglaze the skillet with coffee?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you boil it down.
That's interesting.
And you'll see those beautiful globules of the ham fat that you've deglazed, and it'll have those wonderful little crunchy bits floating in it, and they'll soften a little bit in the liquid. Woo!
I never would have thought. I've had the red-eye gravy in diners, you know.
And when you put the canned milk to it, it turns into dirty gravy, which is one of my favorite things on earth. But I know it's two nights in a row I'm pounding on this, but the fact that hillbillies can't get instant grits who's doing the buying at these stores? Somebody, you know,
I don't it, know, I, but when I, I'm going to tell you
somebody,
something.
You know, somebody drink, from, well, I, it, somebody who
are
doesn't
you
understand
me?
Grits.
That fucking light ass, you know how light that box is?
Yeah.
Weight wise, when you said, I heard what you said, what it cost. I was like, what?
Yeah, I'm not dropping nine. I'm not dropping nine bones for something I may hate, because you know they're not going to get the flavor right. But on that 1 in 100 chance that they do, you know.
But wait a minute. If they do, then you're hooked on it, and it costs too damn much to be getting all the time.
Yeah. Then I got to have it.
Then you have to have it. So that's a conundrum. Well, look, the good grits now, they're scaling back on the good grits, man. I've got to hunt. I'm in the heart of the South, and I have to hunt for the good grits. You know, when I sent Tracy those...
Well, no,
you know,
that's
I,
what
you know,
David checked his local Wally World, and it's on the shelf there. And he's not far from you.
Mm-hmm. They're not on the shelf or on the shelf?
They are.
Get out of here. See, I hate to buy food from there. I hate to buy anything from there. That's the company store, man. What has happened? Let me ask you something. Let me ask you something about white people. This is what I understand.
Yeah, well, okay. I will speak for every white person in America.
I know, and I hate when motherfuckers do that to me, but I'm gonna do it.
No, it's okay. I've made you do it. Okay.
All right. Here we go. It wasn't that many years ago where the most the flag-waving folk of America. We ain't no communist Russia. We can't stand Russia, goddamn it, blah, 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 blah. Now, we love Russia. We ain't got no problem with them taking no money from Russia. Now, is it that they understand that Russians are the whitest motherfuckers on earth, and they know that mountain range over there? That's choice A.
You mean them Caucasuses?
That would be it. Yes. Or is it choice B, we're too ignorant, we don't give a fuck. Or choice C, we just do whatever they tell us to do.
Okay, so there's a couple of different alternatives here, Todd. One of them is you got to remember what, year or so ago, a little more maybe, when the League of the South. I'm sorry, you got to say it that way, Todd. League of the South. South gonna rise again.
Are you on your horse with a saber?
Goddamn right I am. That's Beauregard Kincaid is who that is before Ron can write in.
Oh shit!
They said they were they were gonna have a big party and they were gonna join common cause with our white brethren in Russia. Because there had been a lot of legwork done. See, this is not a boating accident.
Mm-hmm.
To get all Jaws on us.
Mm-hmm.
Russia worked really hard to make BFFs with white supremacists in the United States. It's part of why, I mean, who do you think the majority of the membership of the NRA are, Todd?
See, this is what I was going to ask you. Exactly.
And so from time to time, you and I draw Venn diagrams, and quite often they wind up being fucking circles. Just one circle. Okay, consider the Venn diagram of the League of the South and the NRA and the National Prayer Breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a single circle.
Mm-hmm.
It's all white folks. It's mostly Southern folks, gun owners. And so that's why that one dude that was such good friends with, what's her name? Marsha Gedneth Blackburn, who's now inexplicably a member of the United States Senate, was so tight with the Russians. And that's why they made that overture to go. Now, remember, they don't have gun laws or lack of gun. They don't have a lack of gun laws in Russia like we have here. They keep a close hand on who has a freedom protector.
Yeah. Right.
But nonetheless, they were invited to come to Russia and set up a Russian National Rifle Association. And they had me. They, Huckabee and his wife, and Santorum and his wife, are over at swanning around in Moscow, St. Petersburg, what the hell ever. But there were a lot of American Republicans who were swanning around Russia in advance of the campaign of Donald Trump.
Now we remember talking about this. We talked about this.
But this is even before that.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to keep a close handle on remembering stuff because a lot of this can get lost in the shuffle, but in a good conversation like this, and that's the purpose of conversation radio, is to let it simmer and let those wonderful little juicy bits deglaze off the bottom of the pan and bubble
shit
to the surface.
Oh, that's beautiful, Bob. Go ahead, man.
You don't want this shit on your gravy, man, believe me. Or on your biscuits.
You're right.
There was a lot of hard work that went into infiltrating American so-called patriot organizations that had been decidedly anti-communist. But the problem is that once the Soviet Union fell, they figured, well, they ain't commies no more. And once it became obvious that instead of being communist, that the old KGB spook had reimagined Mother Russia into a fascist dictatorship, well, then, well, them's the League of the South's kind of people.
But I have two questions.
All right. Ask the first one first now, and the second one second.
Okay. Question number one. Do you remember when the previous president said, I wish people would, I'm paraphrasing, I wish people would let go of their belief in the guns and in the Bible.
They cling to their guns and their Bibles. He said it in San Francisco, and it provided fodder for right-wing radio for a month of Sundays, and some of that shit is probably just now passing Pluto.
See, and that was the context was not really there, maybe, but he knew because he was a learned type person. And he was paying attention to his briefs. Okay,
and he was speaking plain English. It's kind of like Hillary saying deplorables. People in my part of the world and people in your part of the world, white people in my part of the world and white people in your part of the world, do cling to their guns and their Bibles. Because everything else has been taken from them. Joe Bagent wrote about this so beautifully, how I wish he was still alive. And, he said, it's not racism in the old sense because white grandma and white grandpa are sitting at the table at the Cracker Barrel with their little white daughter and their little mixed race grandbaby. It's not.
You understand
what he was getting at?
Of course.
But the other thing that Joe talked about was that everything that they had clung to had been taken from them. It's gone.
They ain't got no.
At one point in time, maybe.
My school, I got me a good job and everything, and all that. Look, being now, big that. See?
And so there's a universe of white wing talk radio that since Ronald Reagan has told those people and our side, like the clueless people that we are, we conceded that battlefield to them and said, well, you know, we don't see any value in talking to those people. And it used to I used to have phone conversations from time to time with Joe, and it was the kind of shit that drove him batty. Because he knew these people, he'd been in publishing.
You're fucking kidding me.
No, he'd been in publishing. He grew up white trash. Would tell you he grew up white trash. That getting a union job was the only time that his daddy ever had anything resembling a middle class existence, and experienced the racism of rural Blue Ridge, Virginia, and West Virginia. But he busted his ass, and he went. Joe actually went way the hell up the ladder in publishing, magazine publishing. And so he had those conversations where you know to hold your martini in your left hand so that you can shake hands with your right and call people old egg, and talk with your teeth clenched and periodically adjust your gold chain around your chest hair. He had those conversations with the so-called liberal elite of the Northeast, and he fucking despised them. Now, I'm not talking about working people of the Northeast. I'm talking about the people who say, well, you know what those poor Southerners...
The blue blood folks.
Yeah.
The blue blood folks. Okay. Well, and we get that. Now, question number two. Why is it that the learned folk in the for-profit media... Why do they avoid injecting Maria Butina or Butina, however her name is pronounced, is in our custody and is a bona fide Russian spy who had infiltrated the NRA? See, that's like the Keystone. I'm from the Keystone Commonwealth, or, you know, Keystone State to make it, you know, jingo, but it's the Commonwealth. Now, that is the key. You see, and you know what I noticed? If I remember the last interview, the last public thing she said, she's on that same propaganda line as Putin. Like, we just want to be friends. We want to be friendly. That's the last we heard of her.
I think she's still in the stir. Russia wants her back real bad. They'd like to welcome her with the special penne alla arrabbiata dinner with the famous Moscow marinara. You know, like Jeffrey, like Jeffrey Epstein had for dinner.
See, that's exact, man. Stop it. Yeah, right. I agree with you, man. Come on, man. That's exactly what I was about to say. If some mother's going to end up dead, just like in Philly, man, it's going to be some people end up dead. Wake up dead. You're going to wake up dead. And look, what the hell is going on here, man? People need to wake the fuck up. Yeah. We're in some deep doo-doo now. The economy,
this goes back to, I got up, I engaged in my filthy morning habit, because I was watching for one thing in particular. Joe and Mika can't work a 5-day week. That's just too much for them. I was off Monday, but it wasn't by choice.
Willie's doing a good job, man.
Willie got burnt this morning. Willie got burnt bad this morning.
Oh, I want you to tell me about that.
I checked in this morning to see if they would mention, because this seemed like a story that kind of deserved some eyeballs and some broadcast time. That thing I was talking about last night that BuzzFeed News broke, that the news of Epstein's death showed up on 4chan 38 minutes before it made it to the national media.
Oh, I missed that.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. Well, the fire department of New York was investigating, but then they put out a statement saying, no, we're not investigating. We're looking into. And, you know, there's a big difference between looking into and investigating. And, well, we've looked into, but not investigated. But
those are the EMS people. The fire department in the Northeast, those are the EMS folks.
Yeah, but we've looked into it, and it wasn't one of our people. And the head of the EMS union said, well, you know, this would get somebody in terrible, terrible trouble if they were to have done this, and we can't imagine it was any of ours. But there were a bunch of other agencies and groups that were around the thing. And so any one of them could have pulled out their little pocket computer and put the post on 4chan. But it appears to have just gone down the memory hole, unless somebody picks it up. But I find that an incredibly interesting story.
That's like a granite rock, what you're talking about. That's heavy.
I mean, that speaks to the infiltration of government agencies by white supremacists, and I get, let's see, I'm trying to scratch my head and think back about 18 years, sleeper cells.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we were all just wetting our pants because Muslim sleeper cells were going to get all woke and turn our local Walmarts into a heap of smoking rubble, hollering Aloha snack bar and all that shit. Well, it turns out we may have some sleeper cells, but it ain't none of them Muslims.
Nope.
It's neo-Nazis who go to 4chan.
We've known that. And I'm going to tell you, man, I know.
Yeah, you can say we've known that. We've believed that, Todd, understanding how I feel about that word. But this is concrete proof of the reality.
Well, look at the tattoos they have. Look,
sure. White supremacists, Klansmen, neo-Nazis, whatever, they're all like roaches. If you've got one, you've got 1,000. Zed, we have a bug. Now about young Willie getting burnt.
Okay, but I like what you're saying, though. That's the heaviest thing one of the heaviest things you've touched on tonight. What you just said.
And like I said, I tried to follow it up this morning, and bupkis, no mention of it.
I'm not going to forget what you said. I'm going to be on search for that.
Well, if you go over to BuzzFeed News, you'll find it. I mean, I don't think it's completely disappeared. I found it this morning. So the other thing that happened, though, and this was kind of delightful. And this is how young Willie got burnt.
Mm-hmm.
They had a segment on there, and they brought in a pair of authors, both of them African-American men. And what they did is that one of them, his last name was Kendi, K-E-N-D-I, and the other guy I'd seen before, I cannot remember his name, I apologize. But Willie referred to Dr. Kendi by his first name. And we have here Ibram Kendi. I think that was his full name. And when it came to the other guy, the other author's time to talk, he turned and praised Dr. Kendi and looked at Willie and said, Dr. Kendi deserves his title. He worked hard for his Ph.D. And they didn't put the camera on Willie for a while because I imagine he was about purple. But then everybody else picked up on it, and Claire McCaskill and everybody else on the panel suddenly realized that Dr. Kendi was a real live historian academic. And then the guy
was
who
was a real deal.
Yeah, and they knew they had been schooled and referred to him as Dr. Kendi. It was a moment of rather profound shade. And when they finally brought the camera back around to Willie, the blood had drained out of his face, and all of a sudden it was Dr. Kendi.
Now, which hour was this in? Because I'm going to pull it up on YouTube.
I think it's in the second hour.
Okay.
And the other gentleman gave a bit of a master class on, and they were talking Black history, and for a minute there, I was afraid I was going to look out the window, and it was snowing because it must be February. and he gave names, one of which I don't recall. He said he was publishing the history of Black America in 1894, and W.E.B. Du Bois was doing it in the 20th century, and just name after name after name. And you knew that none of those panelists, with possibly one exception, maybe Yamiche Alcindor, had ever heard of any of them.
Well, that's interesting. You know, that's very interesting. Wow, you have me intrigued now, and I really want to see that. You know,
he didn't get all up in Willie's face or anything. He said, "Dr. Kendi worked for, and he deserves his title."
Just so in other words, just because Willie didn't hear of him, he kind of discounted what the man was saying.
Well, no, it was just that he introduced him as first name, last name, which could be some dude off the street.
Oh, yeah, no, you worked really hard to get that. Yeah, I have
so,
people in my family
and
being on being called doctor.
You worked hard for that. Yeah, in that world, shit rolls downhill, so whoever wrote the script had a bad morning after that.
Well, and they should, man, especially Black folk. Now, look, I'm telling you, man, it's a process. You understand when you got to go through a committee?
Yeah,
and especially if
you
we've
got PhDs in this community, and I've sat and had conversations with Dr. Bill about what he went through to get his PhD in American history and the ratification of the Constitution under Merrill Jensen at the University of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
It was not simple. No, he recognizes that he was the beneficiary of some amazing scholarship, because Merrill Jensen was the be-all and end-all of the history of the ratification.
You know, that I had a discussion with my mother about the University of Wisconsin today when she was telling me she was in Madison, but because I have a number of folk in my family who have more than two or three who have PhDs and, you know, doctorates. And so I've seen it up close. What happens when you take yourself to committee, and And some of these folks have been to Ivy League schools, right? And it's hell. It depends on who your committee chair is.
We have, I can think of one person in our community, a dear friend, and I had the privilege of sort of watching at a distance as he finished his PhD. Mm-hmm. And it was a nerve-wracking experience. And by the way, Jack in Shreveport heard the thing this morning. Subject line, Willie Byrne thing. Jack says, oh, that's what that was. I was looking back and forth from the TV to the computer and didn't catch what that was all about. But and I was, you know, I was sitting there watching that and you know, slurping on my morning decaf that Agnes had lovingly brought to me. And I learn auditorily, which is no surprise given what I do. And I heard the tone of voice, and my head snapped back to the screen, and I watched that little miniature lecture delivered. And it was profound. If you can find that second hour, watch it.
Oh, I'll find it. I had it queued up probably already because that's.
Despite the validity and the quality of what they discussed, I'm guessing those two gentlemen, are not going to come back.
Well, and you intimated that Willie was working from a teleprompter.
Well, sure he was.
So,
we're now proud to be joined by.
Mm-hmm. See, and you have to know who you're. Some people don't care about how you address them, but you can't go wrong by addressing people as who they are. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Right, doctor. I'm presuming you worked for that. You know, exactly. Unless you're Dr. Jerry Falwell or Dr. Rand Paul. It's hard to afford respect to the doctor of Aqua Buddha. But with the subject line PhD, Steve writes in from New York, my partner is getting his PhD. I can tell you that academia is more cutthroat and backstabbing than the worst boiler room on Wall Street. It's brutal and exhausting both physically and mentally.
Exactly. Okay. And you know what, Steve? I hope you're listening because this is what they do. What happens is that there's a hazing and you get pimped out. And I only know this from my graduate classes. What happens is that they use your work. You work hard as hell. And then your mentor takes your work and there's not a damn thing you can do about it. They put the name on it and your name is second. Like, I'm published, okay? I have stuff out there. I'm published. You know, and it's only if you have someone that you're working for that's decent. On the lower level, right, that will put your name
right,
in an article.
But that's after somebody's gotten their PhD and they've moved into a tenure-track position where it's publish or perish.
And then
academia becomes kind of a pyramid scheme where you piggyback on the it's like academic Amway.
Well, that's exactly what it is. I don't see it change anytime soon. That's just the way that system works. They'll take your whole, all your shit. And you know how hard it is to come up with original research? That's kind of, you know, you have to find a niche, you know? You really have to find a niche. But can I ask you a question about Cuccinelli again?
Yeah, because we're back to him. I had a note from Christopher. Hey, Bob, when they open up Maggots University, who will lead the history department, Stephen the Illiterate One King or Ken the Cooch? That's Christopher from Oregon. And the answer is neither. It will be David Barton. I saw a story about David Barton, the fake historian, earlier today, who said, I won't debate anyone from the left unless I get to talk 97% of the time.
Wow.
And Steve, following up, said, in fact, my partner's experience turned him off so turned him off to academia that he wants nothing to do with it after he graduates.
See?
Yeah. Okay, you were going
to
ask
make your own way.
You were going to ask about DeCooch.
The Coos. Okay. So we all saw, I guess everybody listens to your show, we all saw how he, in a flippant manner, made fun of the verbiage on the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
And so in other words, this administration is making no bones about what they're about. They're making no bones about, like, we just want white folk in here, and that's it. And if you don't have any money, don't even bother. And so I'm just thinking about if you could talk about land grants and, like, stake your claim, and, you know, people got free shit. Especially in the Midwest. When you talk about the Midwest.
Yeah, and remember, there's some racism that rides along, you know, anti-indigenous racism that rides along with that, because I think it's in the 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court ruled that all land in America was land for white Christians. And that it could be taken.
I knew nothing of that.
And it could be taken away from the indigenous people because they, quote, never improved the land. They just lived on it for 10,000 years successfully.
Hmm. Wait a minute. Yet we have yuppies, including some of my friends, who go out of their way to buy yurts, which really is like a kind of Mongolian teepee.
Right. It's a sort of culture. It's an outdoorsy bit of cultural appropriation. I'd love to have a yurt myself, but I'm not that hip.
Me too. A backyard yurt? Are you kidding me?
Broadcasting live from the solar powered yurt in Bob's backyard. Yes, absolutely.
Well,
speaking of which, this is just funny. I've run clips of this neo-maxi zoom dweeby white winger named Bill Mitchell. He's a big maggot in Florida. He ran a crowdfunding campaign for $15,000 saying, I need to move to Washington, D.C. so I can be close to the movers and the shakers and get senators and congressmen to come into my studio and do my program. And so the little maggots ponied up, and he made the money. Then he promptly moved to a new swanky apartment in Miami. And when he got called on it, he said, "Do you know how much worse the weather is in Washington D.C.? They get 4 months of nice weather here. We get 12."
Oh man.
And, you know, from time to time, and I mentioned this, we got 33 minutes left in the program. We started out at 200. We're still 200 to go. Weird goose egg.
Oh, God. I'm bad luck. Okay.
No. It's not you. It's just that some nights are like this. I'm thinking about, and I've been thinking about it for ages. I've mentioned it on the air. I'd like to do a crowdfunding campaign. I'd like to do a crowdfunding campaign that put solar panels up and finally, like, did some finishing work in the studio here, insulation, things like that, get a central air and heat unit so that I don't freeze in the winter and burn up in the summer, all of that shit. And the neat thing is, unlike Bill Mitchell, I could send out videos. Hey, look, the solar panel array is going in. Hey, look, here comes the air conditioner. Hey, look, here comes the heat pump.
Like, this is where the money's going. I'm doing it. Here it is.
Yeah. But they're so simple over there on the white wing side. You know, Bill, he loves Jesus a lot, and he needs to go to Washington, D.C. Bang, 15 grand. I frankly don't know.
But if you love Jesus,
I don't know how.
God,
I mean, I've been in D.C. a bit. I don't know how you build a video studio in D.C. for 15 large, but, well, that's it. But no, what it was was the down payment on his Miami condo, and the rubes fell for it.
What?
Yeah, they, I mean, he ran the crowdfunding campaign, got the 15 large, and put it down on a shiny new Miami condo in a tower there.
Just like that.
Yep.
Well, you know,
IOKIYAR.
See, that really gets on my nerves. I just don't. And now that I live I think I'm on the cusp of the Deep South. This is not really the Deep South, I guess.
Yes, there's no cusp. You're Deep South.
Okay, I'm in the Deep South, and I'm telling you, I'm just a hair away from the deep. It's just, I can tell you the highway to take. And I mean, do you understand? In Lexington County, there's a place called Dixiana.
I have no doubt.
It's a hospital I take someone to, and it's right. It's like, it's right there near the airport. Matter of fact, it's near Columbia Airport. But so this solar, these people just, I don't understand. I don't understand. The sun beats. This is the hottest. Do you understand? I was on the highway today doing what I had to do. The outside ambient temperature on the highway was, at that time, it was 101.
I believe it.
And that was at 4 o'clock. So it had to be hotter than that earlier. Then when I got into the neighborhood, it got down to a cool 100. You see?
Yeah, that's bearable.
And now it's raining like hell. But what I'm saying is that the sun beats down like a motherfucker here. I'm like, what? Why are you people, why do these people fight against nature? Just stop it. If you love God so much, if you love Jesus so much, who the fuck do you think put the sun there? He created everything. So work with what he gave you, you fucking dumbasses.
Oh, but see, the problem there, Todd, is you don't understand the evangelical, fundamentalist, ammosexual mindset. Because
I am
here to help. Because they look at climate crisis and they say to themselves, well, God done make it. God can fix it. We don't got to do nothing. God won't let nothing happen unless he's setting up the tribulations. And then we're going to get to go Jew hunting.
But they love Israel.
No. They only love Israel because it's a gathering place and they know where to go to hunt all the Jews when Jesus tells them to gig them.
You're kidding me, right?
No.
See, I didn't know that little chapter there, what you just said.
I got one in particular. Stand by.
I'm serious, because I've been trying to make this connection with Jews won't replace us. Like, okay, you love Trump and Trump loves Israel, but you hate the Jews.
So you're on the same channel as this audio that we're finding some of the shortcomings of the new system. Pastor brother minister Adam Fannin is one of these murder all the gays, fundamentalist, independent Baptist types, I think. And so he's declared a jihad against Sarah Silverman. All right? It was a year ago when he said that Sarah Silverman needed to die because of something she said in 2005 in one of her stand-ups. It was a comedy special called Jesus is Magic. And she said she hoped the Jews did kill Jesus, and she'd do it again, given the chance. Because Sarah Silverman's Jewish. And it was funny, and it was a joke. So, at that point in time, Fannin, preaching at Steadfast Jacksonville Church, declared, I hope God breaks her teeth out and she dies.
Damn.
So a couple of days ago, Sarah Silverman tweeted the video out again and said, if I get murdered, start here. So this past Sunday night, he was back at it again. Let's check in with Pastor Fannin.
And even in trials, God has opened a door for our church that no man can close. No man. I don't care if they're in charge of the UN or the US or Florida or Jacksonville. They can't stop what God is doing. God has opened the door, and no man can stop what he is doing. No man can shut it. Verse number 9. Behold, I will make them of the synagogue of Satan, which say they are Jews and are not, but do lie. Behold, I will make them to come and worship before thy feet and to know that I have loved thee. God's making a point here. Those that worship in a synagogue today that call themselves Jews that are not, they are not God's chosen people. They don't believe on the Messiah. They are not saved. And God says, they hate you, but one day I'm going to make them come and bow before you. They're going to worship at your feet so I can show them how much I loved you. God is going to take the Talmudic Jews and make them worship at our feet, according to the scriptures here. You know, that the Sarah Silverman thing, if she doesn't repent of promoting child molestation, if she doesn't repent of joking about murdering the Messiah, God will force her to bow at the feet of the men in this church one day. She will bow down, and God will judge her, and he will cause her to bow, and she will be judged in hell. Look at verse 10.
Any questions?
I'll find out.
And then there's, let's see, Rick Wiles, this prayer meeting Wednesday. By the way, very kindly, our buddy Steve in New York has put a $15 challenge on the table. So if that's good, that'll knock us down to 170 to go for the evening. Thank you, Steve. Thank you so much. Steve said, no man can stop. Remember what happened to the Witch King of Angmar? Yeah, I know. Wiped out by a woman. Steve said, Todd's right. They love Israel. They hate Jews. So I got Rick Wiles here. And he's decided to work the anti-Semitic side of the Christian street, which is, you know, most of the Christian street. There's really no side to it. It's just all street. And they get so worked up, these little goons do, about movies and cartoon characters and puppets and shit like that. You know, while professing to be Christians, they turn a blind eye to, say, kidnap children that are put in cages and children that die of preventable disease at the border and children whose parents are mass murdered by Christians in El Paso. Ah. Yeah, none of that bothers Jesus in their world. So Wiles, this Rick Wiles creep, is bent out of shape about a movie soon to be released called The Hunt. Now, the plot of The Hunt, Todd, is that wealthy elites get together and they go human hunting. I have a feeling that Robin Williams and Jerry Reed and Walter Matthau did it better in that movie, The Survivors. Not a dog alive can catch an American car built before the catalytic converter. You may from time to time hear me say, "Time out, Jack, time out." That's from The Survivors. But I have a feeling this is like dark and serious, and the rich people get to go hunting, you know, the rest of us. So that's the setup. That's what pisses off Rick Wiles. You might want to get the hockey puck.
Mm-hmm. It's time to shut down Jewish Hollywood. They're talking about murdering conservative Christian rural citizens in this country. That's no joke. The Jews of Hollywood spent tens of millions of dollars to produce that movie. This is not a joke. This isn't satire. They're sending a message. Get ready to kill conservatives. I don't know what to say to you people anymore. I've been trying to warn the people what's coming. I've been trying for years, and I'm being as open as I can. The Jews are plotting a Jacobin revolution in this country. If that hasn't convinced you, what will it take?
Time out, Jack, okay? The Jews are plotting a Jacobin revolution in this country. I'm pretty sure he's confusing Jacob of the Old Testament with a bunch of obstreperous, cantankerous, bloodthirsty Scots, among them my ancestors. And possibly the people in the French Revolution. But my ancestors had to flee here. You know, they fell, when they got here, they fell on the ground and prayed to God, and then they fell on the natives and prayed on them.
Right.
And they were known as Jacobites because they were supporters of the Stuart royal house that began with James Stuart, James the First of England, who took over after Elizabeth, and for whom the King James Bible is known. So they become Jacobites. Jacobins, okay. I think that refers more to the French Revolution.
Right.
But he thinks it refers, I guess, to Jacob, the son of Isaac and twin brother to Esau.
That's why religions are fucked up. I mean, either you believe in a greater being or you don't. All this little intricate shit is a bunch of bullshit. Fuck it. It just doesn't matter. But that's just...
But this guy is creating a Christian ingathering of white supremacist, anti-Semitic neo-Nazis unto himself. And as the song says at the beginning of the program, and it's all tax-free, hallelujah. Okay?
There you go.
Here's the rest of it.
Next year when they're shooting you, are you going to say, they told us. They told us they were going to do this. This is a Jacobin revolution. It is the French Revolution, which is coming to America very, very soon. And rich, powerful Jews are telling you to your face, we're going to hunt you down. We said, Doc, they'll make sure that the Trump voters never do it again.
Right.
I've been mocked for years for warning that this...
No, you've been mocked for years for being a totally clueless, addle-pated dickhead, but do continue.
This revolution is coming. I didn't make that movie. The Jews in Hollywood made that movie.
That's right.
It wasn't made by Presbyterians. It wasn't made by Roman Catholics. It wasn't made by Methodists. It was made by elite, rich Jews who hate Christians.
He hasn't learned to say it right yet. The way it's pronounced, before Brother Deacon Asa can remind me, you have to say, the Jews... Or you say it in your best...
Wait, do it again. How was it?
The Jews! Or else you say it Nixon-esque, the Jews, Henry, the Jews.
You triggered me on Reagan and the monkeys, but that's a whole nother story.
Wait. You get a cowbell for that. Because, you know, you got to remember, Reagan got upstaged in several films by a monkey. Okay, a chimpanzee, but yeah, I know that. Right. Ron in Raleigh reminds us, oddly, The Hunt is a pro-Trump movie. It's the opposite of the Purge movie. I didn't hear him complain about the Purge, did you? Nope. Yeah, everything's a reboot. But I got to give a cowbell to Terrace. Terrace is listening live out on the West Coast and says, the subject line, Jews of Hollywood. The Jews of Hollywood are killing an awesome plate of hummus in Santa Monica. I seen it. Yes! Yes!
And they're loving every bite of it.
And by the way,
Terrace?
Yeah, get it, Terrace. God almighty.
Go, Terrace. Oh, my God. This other shit is fucking convoluted and ignorant. What the fuck is wrong with these people?
But see, I value people like Rick Wiles and that pastor, brother, minister, dickhead. Because they're not hiding behind any of this Judeo-Christian ethic horse shit. They want to. They are homicidal and genocidal and anti-Semitic, and they will tell you to your face that they are. And I remember years ago being told by someone who would know, a rabbi, I think I asked. I said, I know these things. I was dipped by the heel in this as a child. Study to show thyself approved and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, by the way, your book, not mine, because it comes from Proverbs. Mm-hmm. And I said, I'm telling you that these Christians United for Israel and all these fetishistic fundamentalists despise Jewish people. They can't get away from it. They can't get around it. And if you bother, and you know, mostly none of us know about the other. I know a little bit about Islam. I know a little bit about Judaism. Teeny tiny bit about Hinduism. A little bit about Buddhism. But mostly because I was raised in a Christian culture, I know about Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I found that a lot of Jewish people don't know much about Christianity. And the thing is, there's stuff in Christian sects that would set your hair on fire if you're Jewish. Because it's terrifying. It's, I mean, we know the slogan, the phrase, never again. Well, with some of these freaks, it's quick as we can.
Dominion.
And so people like the psychopath Bibi Netanyahu, he'll get down in the waller and roll around with anybody who shows up and professes to like Israel. And he doesn't know shit about Christianity, even though he grew up in the United States. He just knows that a friend of Israel is a friend of his. But they're not friends. The only thing they're looking forward to is that great getting up morning when they get up and Jesus says, I got them lined up for you. Who wants to put them to the sword first? Oh, me! Me, Lord! And there are Christians who really believe that filthy shit.
They're kind of scary. It's kind of scary, isn't it?
I mean, if you ask an Episcopalian, if you ask an Episcopalian, if you ask a decent mainline Roman Catholic, I mean, the Pope himself has said that millennialist, premillennialist horse shit is a straight-up heresy. And, you know, that carries some weight, because that means 500 years ago, they would have barbecued Rick Wiles.
Mm-hmm.
But the Episcopalians will tell you that it's non-canonical bullshit. And some of your, more, because that crap was invented by a dude named Darby in England. And it caught on like wildfire with the semi-literate assholes in this country who were part of the first and second so-called Great Awakenings.
That may be the most important thing you said all night. Because remember, a lot of folk, they learn to read through what book? A book called the Bible. That's why you got a lot of people named Jacob, Michael, John, Mary. You see. But, I mean, this is what I said before. It's just like either you believe in a greater being or you don't. All this other shit is just esoteric. It just means nothing. It's bullshit. I mean, that's me. I'm an Episcopalian. I was an alkalite. I mean, I had to say, I felt the spirit up on the altar because I don't know why. Don't know why. I don't deny it. And I think it was great. I loved it, you know. But at the same time, I'm not judging anybody else. I think, you know, religion should be a personal thing. People don't, you don't need to be out there trying to evangelicalize people and try to draw people in and all that shit. Fuck that. I mean, people have to find out their own way. Do your thing. You know what I mean? Do your thing. Whatever your thing is.
Well, you know, I think about that song John Lennon sang. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right.
Because this shit is convoluted, man. This is dangerous. We're in dangerous territory.
And the thing is, they get to hide all of this evil behind the lace skirts of freedom of religion.
Tax-free.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, an update on the hunt that Rick Wiles was having such a hissy about.
Mm-hmm.
Universal Pictures has canceled the release of The Hunt. It was set to hit theaters September 27th. A spokesperson for Universal said, and this is thanks to Scott in San Diego, while Universal Pictures had already paused the marketing campaign for The Hunt, after thoughtful consideration, the studio has decided to cancel our plans to release the film. We stand by our filmmakers and will continue to distribute films in partnership with bold and visionary creators like those associated with this satirical social thriller. But we understand that now is not the right time to release this film. Hilary Swank, Emma Roberts, Ethan Suplee, Justin Hartley, Jason Blum producing, Damon Lindelof also producing, Craig Zobel directed, Betty Gilpin, Ike Barinholtz are some of the names associated, most of whom I don't even recognize. That's what I get for not going to movies anymore.
Well, The Hunt could be Deliverance. That was a hunt also, but it was not.
No, but the closest analog, as Albert in Rhode Island pointed out, is the Purge movies.
I don't know that.
It was a movie about people getting to, well, pretty much, you know, hunt black people. Albert says you need to watch the Purge movie series. It's similar to the movie that Religious Wacko's talking about, except there were a lot of black folks getting blown away.
Well, before we depart, I would like to say this. I listen different ways to your program. I find that sometimes the best way to listen is to head on live. I think that's the kind of simple interface where it shows your, if you scroll down long enough, it shows your Twitter feed, what you're talking
about. Yeah, the Twitter feed's there, and there's about every potential podcasting platform is there, too. The simplest way to get the podcast is just to go to headon.live.
And that's what I was about to say, because I've gone through a bunch of things. Like back in the day, I used to like Stitcher, except it was like tapping all my damn data. I don't know what the fuck was going on with Stitcher. So I cut Stitcher loose, man. It didn't work for me. So
we're up at iTunes. We're at Podbean, Stitcher. Progressive Voices. We've got our own little channel. And you can,
well, the reason I brought up, the
and you can find it all at headon.live.
The reason I brought up headon.live is that I saw a new posting on there where folks are encouraged to, you know, post their opinions about your program on iTunes.
Yeah,
and I think that's a monumental feat, because when I went to iTunes, There's the quality of your program. There's not enough postings. I mean, the quality of what you deliver.
Yeah, but see, iTunes is one thing. YouTube, you know, there's no video to go with it. But yeah, I get it.
Well, right. So all I'm saying is that folks read through that. Go to headon.live and look where you can post and post your comments about the program. Because this is, you know, and I don't have any skin in the game. I really don't. I'm just saying it. You know, we talk about things that happen. We talk about shit that happens It happened like a month, 3 weeks, 4 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah. I mean, it's almost like we've got a portal or something, but it's not magic. That's the thing about prophecy isn't magic, and I'm not a prophet. But what it is the ability to look at the circumstances and see which way things are going and what the possible ramifications are if things continue in that particular way, in that particular direction. Hey, by the way, we got a note from Lady B. I know you always enjoy these. Because, hey, dot, 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 why not? Begins laughing hysterically. Why the fuck not? Quote, Alan Dershowitz will take part in a mock trial event in which he will defend biblical characters accused of kidnapping and child trafficking.
What happened to him? Now, he's got the spiral keys to his brain, too. He used to be normal. What the fuck happened to him?
Who knows what they were putting in the water at Pedophile Island?
I mean, seriously, Alan Dershowitz used to be the leader of fighting for regular folk.
Seriously. Well, maybe they weren't as regular as that. Maybe they weren't as regular as you thought they were, Todd.
My God.
By the way, note from Robert in Australia. The trailer says The Hunt from the producer of The Purge. Cancel the release of a movie? A great way to raise interest in a real dud. Banned in Boston. But it's not the first time it happened. You remember Dave Barry, right?
Yeah.
Comic columnist for the Miami Herald.
Yeah.
He wrote a book called Big Trouble. And it was funny as hell. But it centered on a loose nuke, a suitcase nuke.
I used to read his column, yeah.
And I read the book, and it was one of those where I laughed until the tears rolled down my face. There's this running gag through the book where the guy keeps hitting the scan button on his radio, and all he can find is sports talk radio with people talking shit on Miami or people talking shit on Florida State and people talking shit on the University of Florida, and it's always the same thing. Well, if Florida's not afraid to play us, they need to schedule us. Well, if Florida State's not afraid to play us, they need to schedule us. And then he hits scan, and Bill Doberman will make South Florida safe. Bill Doberman has family values. And so Bill Doberman. And the book was successful. It sold a number of copies, and it got optioned to Hollywood. And it got made into a movie. You can look it up to this day, and you can watch it. But it just happened to be slated for release. I think it was due to premiere on September the 11th, 2001.
No shit.
And it got pulled.
And that was it.
Because it was about a terrorist attack on the United States that killed... You know, right. And it wasn't a bad movie.
Now, right, because the big movie... Aniston and... right? With the dog? That was Dave Barry.
I'm not sure, but they pulled the movie because it was just wrong to release that movie... At that time, kind of the way it would be wrong to release The Hunt
right.
when maggots are doing exactly that right now.
Well, right, and it ties into what Russia has been doing and what God knows what we're doing. You know, these are crazy times. But see, now we have these dominionists are in power now. We cannot afford to deal with this administration another week. You see what's happening.
Yeah, and that's something I said last night. It's almost, if you look at the mad radical shit that they're doing, it's almost like they know that they're on the clock, that time is running out, and they have to get as much evil done as they possibly can. Because I think they suspect that they're about to lose an even bigger chunk of their base. I mean,
I don't know, Bob.
Ronna Romney McDaniel, the stupid Romney, the stupider Romney, got raked over the coals on Twitter today because she bragged about Trump being neck and neck with Joe Biden in, like, Florida or something.
Mm-hmm.
I forget what state it was.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, really. Yeah, well, he's almost running even with Joe Biden. Good for you, Ronna.
Oh, God.
How long do you expect to keep that job? Looks like it may be going. You may be going back to being a sister wife real soon.
You know what I'm concerned about, and that now that you brought it up, seriously, and I know we have to go. I just look to call. Look, this is worrying me terribly. All right, the DNC is weak in leadership. I don't know who the hell is advising these people. Perez is a weak MF. I don't know what he's thinking about. Because this ship is sinking.
Well, his hidebound insistence that we will not have a Democratic climate debate is about the dumbest thing I've heard since pants with four legs.
Is that funny? See, do they understand this is hard? This is the most serious election in our lifetimes. This is it.
Yeah.
Have you not heard these people? These people are on a mission. These mugs are on a mission. They had the right people in place to fuck everything up.
Yeah, they've got an air of desperation about them. They remind me of a bunch of Nazi functionaries hanging out in the bunker with their hands on their cigarette packs and their lighters waiting to light up.
For the last cigarette?
No, for the first one. Have you never seen The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich? Read it? Yeah, Hitler hated smoking.
He was a veggie.
And the first thing that a bunch of them did down in the bunker after he offed himself was to light up a cigarette.
Yeah, but the followers, I'm telling you, man, I live down here. These people, I'm telling you.
Wait a minute. You're talking about people in South Carolina. That's not the same thing. They're gonna vote for Donald Trump no matter what he does. I mean,
the South is going to vote for Donald Trump, and the South is the most powerful voting bloc in this nation.
But now there are places that are getting a little pink instead of blood red. But South Carolina South Carolina and West Virginia, you know, I've said for a long time that eventually Trump is going to completely lose it and tear his clothes off on the podium, bite the head off a live chicken, and start playing with himself in front of the maggots. And they will cheer like mad if it's in West Virginia or South Carolina or Alabama. So I know your statistics. You're not by talking from a South Carolina standpoint. I don't think you're using a valid sample.
I understand that.
I mean, it's a given that South Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas, whatever. But
I also understand that he has stoked racism in this country, and there are more
this country
who identify with that than you would like to think. And I also understand.
I predicted
he would win.
Not that I would think. I'm the one that says the problem is far worse than that most of America ever dreamed. But he's losing ground in Wisconsin, Minnesota, and Pennsylvania. And if he's gone there, and if he loses ground in Ohio, he's done.
Well, right, and that's what it sounds.
You know, barring a Russian miracle, and that ain't out of that's not out of the possibility. Hey,
well,
I need to wrap up, but I want to wrap up with a happy story.
Okay.
Dateline Indian River County, Florida. This is Florida Man, of course.
Grapefruit territory, yeah. Indian River.
Vero Beach, according to tcpalm.com, dude thought he was 140 miles away in Tampa, but he was in Vero Beach. Carlos Guillen of Port St. Lucie got busted and jailed for DUI because police got called to Vero Beach outlets where they reported a man in the driver's seat of a parked vehicle, and the interior of the car smelled like liquor. They found a half a bottle of Hennessy cognac in the passenger seat and a cup full of something that looked like booze in the cup holder. The cops asked for his driver's license, and he handed them a vape pen instead that he said was full of, you know, THC oil.
Oh, God.
I asked Guillen if he was enjoying Tampa and where he was staying. According to the cop, Guillen pointed south of the outlet mall and advised he was at a church convention approximately 4 miles in that direction. And eventually he told them that he was smoking the oil vape with the THC, quote, this is a quote, to get himself ready because Jesus was returning. So, listen, if you want to get ready for the second coming, you want some of that high-quality 85% THC vape cartridge stuff. At least that's what I gather from this story. I think the Hennessy is probably just a bonus.
Well, you know, in South Carolina, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know anything about it. I can't do any of that anymore. So, you know, I work for the city. Can't do this shit. But I will say this. God bless them.
Yep. There's nothing in there about he killed anybody or crashed into anything. Just sitting there getting blazed, waiting for Jesus to come back. And the story also says he flashed the peace sign along the way, too. So he's waiting for Jesus to come back and make things better, whereas your Rick Wiles is waiting for Jesus to come back so that Rick Wiles can go on a homicidal murder spree. I guess all murder sprees are homicidal, aren't they? Yeah, Rick Wiles, the guy at the hunt, the Jews, you know, they're going to kill us.
The vape and the murder spree is incongruent.
Right, he's not going on one. He's just chilling, flashing the peace sign to the deputies. Cool, man.
I know. But, so anyway, I remember seeing the, it was all over the Hill newspaper about that movie being pulled, you know, The Hunt. And so, you know, what is it going to take? I just don't understand.
I know. Just by way of ending on a truly happy note, I have to give you a shopping recommendation. I mentioned it at the beginning of the program, talking about Fellowship Hall dinner. Kroger has the best cheesesteak steak I've ever had.
The store brand?
Yeah, it's like vacuum sealed in a styrofoam thing, and you can tell it's real thin sliced steak.
It
works up beautifully on that propane griddle.
That's what all right. That's what I'm talking about. We're talking about some real doo-doo now. Okay.
Yeah, because, everything I was talking about was really true. Up at the Wiggling Pig, they've got this Amish country American cheese in the deli. I get it sliced. Right. I get it sliced on number 3, and it melts perfectly. And it's this beautiful, sunny, golden color. If you want to use the white American, that's okay, but I prefer a little color.
Right.
And, you know, the onion, your onions and your green peppers and your mushrooms.
See, do you have those simmering on the side, just ready, just ready?
Yeah, because the furthest burner to the right, I just turn down low, and just kick them around a little bit every now and then, turn them, move them, turn them, hack at them a little bit with the side of the spatula, make that happy ding 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 noise.
Yeah, yes.
And. Oh. The one thing I didn't, when I get up to Country Club Bakery in Fairmont again, I'm bringing home the bread, because that's an Italian community that started all that up there, and their hoagie rolls are fit for God Almighty.
They had that little stuff like grits on the outside. It's
cornmeal, and to keep it from sticking to the spit, you split that thing open. And lay it over that simmering beef and cheese, and let the steam get in the middle. Oh, and then you put the spatula and you.
Oh, damn, man!
And then the onions and the green peppers and the mushrooms on top. A little schmear of mayo, a little schmear of mustard, some tomatoes maybe.
Let me ask you this. Because when I go over to the capital city, the Trader Joe's is just blocks away from a Kroger. So I hit both of them when I go over there because, you know, it's so far away. And their bread, they have sweet potato bread. They have the onion rolls. They have the wide pan sandwich bread. They have, like all the bread that you would want to eat. And it's always on sale for $2. Now, over here, just a shitty ass bag of onion rolls is $4. Twice as much.
Yeah.
So I'm following your lead on this.
Yeah, but
so
I'm telling you, their cheesesteak steak is better than Steakum's by 1,000 miles.
Well, shit. Well, that's some good shit then. I'm taking your lead on this.
As it's sitting there simmering before I put the cheese on and stuff, and I'm ding, ding, dinging, you know, chopping it up and stuff.
Right, right.
Right before I lay the cheese on, I sprinkle on a little Lowry's, a little seasoned salt, then lay then lay down the cheese. I could have a second.
You're cooking with goodness, man. You got, and I know that thing is seasoned down. Your griddle is seasoned.
Oh, yes, it is. I kind of have to re-season periodically because it's got a cover over it, but it's not under a roof. So it'll get a little sweaty when it rains, but it just seasons right up, and it's good to go again.
Right. Wow, man, that's a whole other conversation that I would like to have one day. That's wonderful. I can't tell you how happy I am for you with that, because that be able to cook that outside and do the right thing. There's nothing.
And you know, it's August. I'm gonna be cooking on that thing into December. Hell, I may be out there in January. I'm a hard ass.
You know, damn right you will be. Are you kidding me? Come on. It doesn't take long. That's the beauty of it. You can put the onions and peppers on the grill and they'll do their thing. Put some oil on them. Boom. They'll do their thing. And then when you're ready to make that steak.
Yeah. And you just got a note from Scott in San Diego. If this radio thing doesn't work out, you've got a great name for your new food joint. Happy Ding Ding.
Listen, those spatulas, I'm telling you, Scott, if you're listening, when you go to a steak shop and the guys had these two big spatulas, like ting, 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 they have a note. It's like a, it sounds like a C maybe. What do you think? Is it a C? Ding, 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 ding. It's a C.
Yeah, it may be a middle C.
There's a certain ding they have to them, and it, you know, these are the institutional type drones with the the wood handles.
Yeah, I'm tempted to get me a rat tail file and go all archaeologist with the Marshalltown trowel on it and put an edge on the sides of that thing, you know, so it just should.
Yeah. Oh my God! See. Listen, just a half a teaspoon of soy sauce on that.
Not Worcestershire?
I'm telling you, it brings out the flavor in that beef. it brings out the flavor in that beef. You know, everybody has their certain way to eat. Like, some people like it with a little bit of Mariana sometimes instead of ketchup. Some people, you know, personally, I don't do that. I like a little bit of ketchup. But I like a light layer of mayo on that roll.
Yep.
You got to have a light layer of mayo on that roll before you put the steak on there. And then something magical happens when that hot, greasy beef.
Now, in your grocery store, in your Kroger's, you may be able to find a steak marinade. It's not a steak sauce, but you want to use it very sparingly. If you marinate a steak in it, it'll just be too salty. But it's called Dale's sauce, D-A-L-E apostrophe S, and it's
I love Dale's. I've used Dale's.
And it's
has a little weird ass logo. It looks like it's from 1962.
Because it is. Because it is. That started out at a little steak joint in my hometown. But you kind of you uncap it and you put your thumb over the end, and you just shake it very gently across that stuff because it's mostly soy sauce, but there's a little ginger in there too.
I know Dale's. No shit. That's why Dale's is special. Okay. Yeah. No, I know Dale's.
I get the low sodium variety because a lot of salt in it.
It's a lot of salt. Yeah. It's a lot of salt.
Hey, but we've run 15 minutes over. We had to have a food porn. We had to have a food porn segment, Todd.
Well, look, man. Wow, we covered a lot of ground. So hopefully we'll be around tomorrow. All of us. I'm telling you, man, Philly's going to blow up. Philly's going to be on the news tonight. For anybody watching the news, this shit's going to be on national news. 11 o'clock news. It's a big deal. And it's going to be 100,000 dead Negroes after this.
Don't say it.
I'm just telling you how they work, man. This ain't no joke, man. They don't take that shit lightly at all, period. So we'll see. Bob, man, and once again, everyone, listen, go to iTunes or wherever you can to, you know, list a positive comment for the program. Because we talk about a lot of things on this program.
Yeah, we do.
Bob brings up a lot of issues, but, you know, if you look back, go into the archives. That's all I have to say. Go into the archives and you'll see.
Yeah, there's only 15 years of them, so.
Yeah, that's not much, you know. Yeah.
A lot of listening. Todd, you have yourself a good night, my friend.
Take care. You
later.
Too, man.
Our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina Stan. We're going to end on a very pleasant note. I got a note from David from San Francisco, a member of the Fraternity of David. Congrats, Bob. Congrats on the improved audio. It seems that the dreaded clipping of that board is gone. Have you fixed it, or is that old thing now pining for the fjords? It's been pulled out. It's been pulled out of the audio chain and replaced by the road rig, which is, well, not just ROAD, but RODE. And it's a great little unit. It's just got a few shortcomings. And we gotta engineer around those somehow. Also, your signal's louder, says David. I no longer need to crank up my iPod to full volume. Thanks, David. Thank you very kindly. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Thank you a bunch. Have yourself a wonderful evening out there in the San Francisco Bay Area. And the rest of you have a great evening as well, or morning, or whenever you're listening to this program. Thanks to all of you who keep the program going. We didn't meet Steve from New York's challenge, and so tomorrow will be $400. But we'll find a way to keep it all going, keep the plate spinning on the sticks, because, well, that's your determination that this continue. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing little conversation. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you. Thank you very kindly, Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.